Lapine City Council work session for August 25th, call to order. Mayor Pro Tem, Governor, we'll call the meetings. Our mayor, Kenny Shields, will be a little late. Call meeting to order at exactly 6 o'clock. Roll call, starting on my left, please.
Councilor Brenner.
Councilor Douglas Ward.
Rick Allen, City Manager.
Councilor Hedges.
Councilor McAfee.
Okay, and as I said, our mayor will be a little late.
City Recorder, Dan Rebecca.
Oh, you're here.
Administrative Assistant, Patty Morgan.
Yeah, I'm new at this, okay? Number three on the agenda, Crestview Cable Communications update, Mr. Harris. Okay. You may stand or sit, whatever is comfortable for you.
Well, I'm comfortable. So, excuse the shorts, and we had a little time, so we thought we'd enjoy some of the splendor of Central Oregon and hike into Venom Falls, and almost made it before the mosquitoes sucked out most of it. People were running out of there, and we thought, oh, we're lucky to handle it. Well, we're with it tough. It was still a wonderful few minutes to hike down through there. Since I last spoke to the council, we got our initial franchise, and there's been a number of changes. And historically, I like to go around once in a while and just give the city council an update of the type of services we're offering the citizens. And I guess I'll start by explaining a little bit of our system geography here in Lapine. And actually, we go from South 6th Street in the south to up Deschutes Water Wonderland, which is, you know, just outside of where Thousand Trails is up there. We cover that much beyond north to south. We go over almost to the river. I'm trying to think of the street over there, Lawrence Meadows, and over in that area. And on this side, we take in Newberry Estates and all the things down around here, just to the east here. And of course, in the middle of that is the city limits. So it's a fairly sizable system. We serve a lot of the area down here. What current services we're offering, people, if anyone who's watched any, you know, paid attention, is we do offer the triple play. I mean, we're a small operator, but we're pretty high end a lot of things. We're a triple play, we offer video, including digital video services and HD services. We offer internet, two levels of broadband internet, and we offer one level of phone service, digital phone service right now. Things that have happened, our staffing, we have two field people here, one part-time person who works in the office. There's quite a bit of what's called provisioning for the equipment we place in the customer's premises and stuff like that, and that person does a lot of that and answers phone calls. Some of the things that have happened since we last spoke is we created a virtual call center. We also have systems in Pineville and Madras, and we have through our own internet, we have a phone system that all those phones are on the same line. So you might call the Lapine number, you might get someone in Madras, you might get someone in Pineville, you might get someone here, and vice versa. It's an opportunity to improve our customer service levels, mm-hmm. so that we have everyone available answering the phones, and it's really worked out quite well. We haven't marketed it yet, but we've added, I believe, 10 HD channels here in the last week. We're up to 20 HD channels, which represent most of the lion's share of HD viewing nationwide. We've increased our internet connectivity to the internet to allow us to maintain a much higher level of customer satisfaction for our broadband internet services. Things in the immediate future is we're going to be rolling out a lower cost phone service, which will be primarily a more of a traditional phone service, and then it'll be, you know, you have unlimited local calls, and then you can have, you know, standard rates of 4 or 5 cents a minute, whatever, for long distance calls. We had to upgrade our billing system to be able to do that, but it'll also include tons of features, call forwarding, caller ID, voicemail, you know, the whole gamut on that. And one thing we do in our phone service is to try and help customers understand their bills better is we include all the taxes. We don't break out taxes. There may be a little bit of that if people go to have long distance charges, but for the most part, I can't figure it out, and I'm in the business, so it's nice to have it just a single line. And we're also going to be rolling out a new, on our as far as customer service management, we're rolling out the new total online package as far as payments and enable customers to manage their own accounts better online. So, and that will be happening in the near future. So, we've got a lot of things going. This business changes rapidly. And we've been serving this area for 25 years or better. And
Like I said, it's got a, you know, we've got a fiber, a hybrid fiber cable system down here. It's a great platform. It operates very well, and everything's got backup power supplies. We've got tremendous backup power supplies that are head in because there are, you know, we have lightning in this area and they have grounding issues. It's a challenge sometimes to keep power up. Mm-hmm. So but with our new configuration, we've split the system up in multiple areas, so if we get an area in one area, it only affects that area. If we have a problem in that area, we take a lightning hit on something. And so that's really helping reliability. Our system reliability has improved dramatically. So I just kind of wanted to update you, and hopefully you feel good about the, you know, the level of service we're providing. It's a challenge in rural areas. And you guys, as you guys have learned, a lot of the things you have to buy to manage a city and some of the infrastructure, it's the one device you buy, you can service one customer of 50,000, and we don't scale to that, just like you don't in a lot of the city things a lot of time, but we're pretty pleased with the level of equipment we've added, like I say, the different things we're doing, like along the lines of the backup power supplies and stuff, which are critical for to be able to maintain telecommunication services. So I'd be happy to field any questions anyone has, or always feel free to call me, or we have a local manager in Prineville. I'm based out of our corporate office in Medford, but I used to be in the area. I'm pretty familiar. I was here when we did all the build out here and stuff. I was the manager in Prineville. So, and matter of fact, did this from Mr. Allen while he was mayor of Madison a number of times to update, so he knows the drill.
I have a question.
Yes.
Why does one channel, like sometimes watching even in clear weather, go wacky and look like a puzzle that goes...
Well, I don't know what the channel is, so I can't...
9.
And that's KOHD. I think that'd be the ABC affiliate out of again. unless we have a reception problem, because we've put in a new taller tower and put in new, in the last, recently we have put in new feeds to that. Off-air is our biggest challenge, the off-air stations, because they're subject to more atmospheric conditions and things like that, and it depends on their footprint. And off-air has always been our challenge in Lapine. By that, I mean the local broadcasters, because we're kind of on the fringe area of a lot of their transmission. KTVZ is usually fairly strong, and we work, most of their engineers are great to work with, and we work hard together, like, so if we have a problem. And that's a digital channel, so rather than going traditionally fuzzy, I mean, broadcast digitally, rather than traditionally go fuzzy, it breaks up, you get what's called tiling. It's data, so it doesn't, you know, it used to be... things would go fuzzy when the signal's getting weak. That doesn't happen in the digital channels now. They can do some awfully strange things.
Do they all come out of there? Do you get some signals through, like, wire or something?
Well, we either satellite or over the air. All of our VIN stations come to us over the air. Mm-hmm. We get, and like I said, we've installed a tower down there. We did a number of things. We just did a lot of work to our things. The Fox affiliate has been a real challenge to us because it's a low-power TV station. Although Ben has put that on as a secondary digital.
How many of those big, white, beautiful-looking and...
Earth stations.
Like you're monitoring Russians. How many of those are still viable and actually taking in a signal?
Probably most of them.
Are they?
When you think of how many... And most of them are picking up multiple feeds.
Okay, quite a few.
Yeah, we try and keep one spare because one of the major cable satellites just died, and they were worried it was going to run into the new one that they put into place. It's getting crowded in the sky. And with all the services we pull in, we use most most of them.
I just was by there a couple days ago, and I noticed all of them.
Yeah, it's...
They're back by their office down in the gully.
3rd Street, yeah. It's... Well, we're picking up, 100 stations off the satellite, and they're not all off the same satellite. So, they're far from my knowledge. I've always tried to keep, if we can clean one up by picking up more than one satellite off one, we like to have one because things happen real quick, and sometimes you have to jump onto another satellite. Yeah.
Any further questions from the council? Anyone in the audience would like to ask a question?
I have a question.
If you would, please state your name and your address, and keep it to 2 minutes if you can.
30 seconds. Why is the channel, the ad channel, local ad channel, why is it always 15 to 20 degrees different than what the weather report says?
We're down in the Gully. I don't know. I have to look into that because I don't know the specifics on that.
I mean, the Channel 5 says the high today was 85 and your channel says it was 103.
Well, we might be running out of the sun.
That's a big difference.
It was 99.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. State.
Yeah. It was. I know it was close to that.
I mean, sometimes it'll be nice and cool and put a sweater on outside and the TV still says it's 92. I mean, literally, you should see that.
Well, I'll look into it. I said, I'm not curious. So I'll be happy to look into that. I'm looking forward to those questions because those are always challenges and we like that to be pretty accurate. I mean, we had to build like NWS boxes because, you know, they take an average mean temperature and not in the direct sunlight. It's kind of like if you look at the trip check things, you'll look at some of the way up in the mountains and down in southern Oregon, there's one that's like 15 degrees warmer than Medford in the morning, and that's just because it's getting hit directly in the sun. So, but we've got a fairly spindly weather system hooked up to that building, so we'll have to look into that.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else?
Yeah. I have a question.
Vicki, name an address, Miss Vicki. We know who you are, but anyway.
Nick Court, Three Rivers. When I got into real estate in March of 2007, I guess Crestview had come down Huntington, I'm right off Huntington, and I guess they hadn't gone on my court. So at that time in 2007, I guess you guys didn't have all the high speed to the whole area. So I signed up for Yellowknife. And I wanted to know, I was just wondering as far as coverage, have you guys gone and done all of the Pine, and is your high speed comparable with like a wireless? Because I think I've got a tenant, so I guess that's broadband. It's pretty fast.
Yeah, well, you got a hybrid system. You got a downstream wireless, and you have to also have a phone connection for your upstream, which limits your upstream cable. If we have cable service there, we have high speed.
Okay.
And I'll put our high speed against any wireless as far as long term reliability, things like that.
Yeah, because mine's all wireless. So.
Most of the wireless are what's called a hybrid because they can't transmit back to the. A lot of them don't transmit back to them. It depends on, you know, I don't know the exact configuration of each because your computer doesn't have a transmitter. So you can have pretty good downstream speeds, but sometimes upstream speeds are more limited. And our upstream speeds are equal to T1, the 1.5, our high speed.
Anyone else in the audience? No? Thank you, Mr.
Thank Huff, you very much.
Thanks, Roger.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to item number 4. Update on text amendment, industrial park height restrictions. Mr. Leak, you may use the podium or the chair. Take your pick, whatever's comfortable for you.
Thank you. Good evening, Council. I'm Nick Leak, the Deschutes County Planning Director, and I'm with Will Groves, the senior planner, who's working on this. I'll turn the meeting over to Will, and he'll do the play-by-play, and I'll do the color if needed. All right, good evening. Where we are in the process is that tomorrow night we have scheduled a joint hearing between the Deschutes County Board of Commissioners and the Planning Commission on this matter, and they will both receive testimony and evidence tomorrow night, and depending on how they find that testimony and evidence, they may make a decision, they may request additional information, they may ask for additional hearing date, depending on what information is presented and how they evaluate it. If tomorrow night they decide to approve the application, the earliest that it would be adopted as effective ordinance would be September 8th. And that's because once they've decided to adopt it, they have to write findings and explain why it was adopted, and the September 8th is the first date that they could adopt those findings and that ordinance. As we move forward in the process, we're seeing increasing community interest, concern, even some opposition. Not specific to the text amendment, but specific to the plant, concerns about traffic in particular, but also about pollution, water use, wastewater generation. Seems like there's some significant interest. I've received some comments from people who I would characterize as professional opponents of energy generation facilities, people from out of the area who have long histories of working with these things, you know, in a professional capacity. So there are local residents reaching out for help, saying this is not something we want, and, you know, what resources are available professionally to oppose something like this. So we're starting to see calls like that.
So what makes you say that citizens are reaching out for professional help?
The professionals that I'm talking to are saying that they were contacted by local people to help oppose this application. Or at least, not necessarily, it's unclear at this point for most of them if they do not want to see the plant in its entirety or just have concerns about impacts. But you know, they're people who by any means aren't boosters and are certainly concerned about visual impacts, noise impacts, you know, some of the water impacts that I outlined before. But in each case of the two professionals I've talked to, they said, you know, that they were contacted by citizens for help with this.
Okay.
Have you seen copies of
that? Yeah, that's, you know, I'd like to comment on that. That is, that's irresponsible. That is fear-mongering. It's ridiculous if you really think about it. If you think, all of us have the knowledge to dispute that. When you want to disinfect water, what do? You boil it. Whether we go for the experts, and that particular gentleman, I think, lives not in Lapine, not in Central Oregon, but in Beaverton. And he's also done he's done this one as well. Does that look familiar? And this was, he was opposing something in Washington and Rainier, Oregon. So.
Yeah, that's the people you're talking about, probably.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. When last I talked to you, I had only really heard from boosters and people vaguely concerned about visual impacts. So I'm hearing both professional and regular citizen questions about specific to the site plan conditional use process. You know, what will the noise impacts be?
Mm-hmm.
How will a 150-foot stack versus a 100-foot stack change pollution distribution? You know, what effects would be anticipated from that? So people are starting to focus on specific issues.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an idea of how many calls have been received? How many people are complaining in numbers?
Between 10 and 20 at this point.
Between 10 and over what period of time?
To date.
To date?
Right, since the year.
To date from a year and a half ago.
Right. You know, and I think, and I'm characterizing here, but most of the people that I've spoken with, they want to know, is it time to hit the ground running? You know, is this the time when if I have opposition or questions, do I do this? And I explain to them, well, we're in a text amendment process that's specific to, or is general to the Lapine Industrial Zone, general to utility facilities, and only deals with height issues.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the people I spoke with said, oh, I'm really concerned about traffic, noise, water mm-hmm. issues. I said, okay, well, if this text amendment's approved, you know, you'll certainly want to track that. And if you've got concerns about visual impacts, height,
mm-hmm.
and things related to height, you want to be a part of this process. If you want to deal with some of those other issues, that's a conditional use site plan
mm-hmm.
issue. And so I think a lot of them are, what they're feeling I get from them is that they're not so concerned with the height in itself and really interested in the details of the impacts from a specific plant.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of sewer water is it treated?
You know, I was hoping the BioGreen representatives would be here this evening.
Because the water board was concerned that it would be using their water, which they don't use sewer water. So,
well, the plan that we have listened to was that they were going to use the effluent,
mm-hmm.
which I believe was class 3, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's the same water.
It's class 3.
Yeah.
So that is just above drinking water.
Yeah.
And that is purer than in the Deschutes River.
Has there ever been any comment about the Medford plant? I don't hear a thing about them.
No. Haven't heard anything about the Medford plant from the public comment. And so, and I don't know to what extent you were briefed on this issue. There was a question about how Deschutes County was going to process this application,
mm-hmm.
assuming that the text amendment came in and was approved,
mm-hmm.
and then BioGreen was to make an application. We, as your consultants, effectively, your planning consultants who process your land use applications. We were wondering if you had direction for us on how you might like us to process it. And a number of options had been discussed. Left to ourselves, we would send this to a hearings officer directly. So if this was a Deschutes County application, given the level of controversy, complexity, we would send it to a hearings officer. Hearings officer processes directly, take on average 125 days to process, and of similar applications, take a minimum of about 77 days to process. But there had been some discussion of, and I don't know if BioGreen has presented you with a letter or had contacted you about this, the question of if you were going to direct us to process it administratively. Mm-hmm. So to make a first, to make at least the first cut at it as staff, issue an approval or denial, and then from that point to see if it would be it'd be appealed by a member of the public, and if it was appealed, you know, there would certainly be an option for the Lapine City Council to call it up and become the hearings body for it. Have you delved into these issues at all? Or is
that's why you're here.
Okay. So let's get back to the text amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to have the joint hearing. And now, what about is what we heard about the emergency clause, mm-hmm. that it might be passed that night? You didn't touch on that.
So an emergency clause allows, in a case of public health and safety, and it's used broadly, to immediately adopt an ordinance. So once the board says, yes, we'll adopt an ordinance, they have formally decided to adopt it, but usually there's some delay between when it goes into effect. They do a first and a second reading, and then there's 90 days until the ordinance comes into effect. So there's, you know, there's some time between the final decision that this will be law and the availability of that law to be used by applicants. An adoption by emergency simply means that the ordinance language that they've permanently and irrevocably decided to put into effect is immediately usable by applicants.
And it's my understanding that that's what probably will happen tomorrow.
Well, it's been requested
by
the applicant. Mm-hmm. And just as the city deals with this issue in the future, you'll come to learn very quickly that cities can, if you adopt something by emergency, it's effective immediately just in the county. But if you don't, your ordinances are in effect in 30 days, whereas ours are in effect, counties are in effect by state law in 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bar is just high for this application, given how time-sensitive everything is. We did, Will spoke with, has been in daily contact with all of BioGreen's representatives, their engineers, their consultants, etc. And we talked about the process of tomorrow night. Hopefully the Planning Commission will move the application to the board, and then the board would have until September 8th. And BioGreen specifically told Will today that a September 8th decision is absolutely fine with them, because they will not have their conditional use site plan application ready to submit until that day.
Okay.
I think because they're just trying to pull all these different pieces together to make a complete application. So
they aren't ready to pull out yet, are they?
Our understanding is that it's all systems go, and we're and we're working with them.
Yeah.
So we can't. The councilors cannot speak tomorrow night. Is that my understanding?
Oh, on the text amendment, you can.
Oh. Okay.
Yes, on a text amendment, which is a legislative matter, you're welcome to talk as much as you like about
okay.
it. The key issue is if it's quasi-judicial, which means it's applying that code to a specific property. That's the situation where you can't have the ex parte contacts with members of the applicants. You can always have contact with us. We serve as your staff. We can talk about anything you would like to talk about, but it's not with the applicants or in any other way that would influence your decision on that quasi-judicial decision. That's the key. In fact, I think the board of the Planning Commission would appreciate hearing from the Lapine City Council or Planning Commission tomorrow.
We plan on some being there. I don't know who else is going to work on that later, but there will be some there.
Okay. We can also talk about some of the timelines, if you wish, of the different options that Will had mentioned, but that's...
Well, I think that what we need to do is answer the question of are they okay with the having the staff do the conditional use instead of the hearings officer. And we're in a work session, so we don't vote, but we can certainly give direction to me, and then I can send you an email that tells you kind of what's the general direction here. So it's not something where someone makes a motion and seconds or does anything like that, but So we do need to hear. That's really a fundamental. You can talk about all the rest of the things, but the fact is, it's a 100 and some day process. He said, or 70 plus, or you do it the other route, which is you do it. The staff makes a recommendation. Which is what's that process like?
Okay.
Let me at least lay out the kind of what the two processes are, and then we'll talk a little bit about the specific timeline. So again, the default process, you know, if this was a county application, we'd send it to a hearings officer. There's a 20-day notice period before the hearing can occur, and then the hearings officer will conduct a hearing around. It's usually around day 24 to 30, depending on the hearings happen on Tuesdays. Hearings officer takes about a month to make a decision. And so under that process, the applicant would be seeing a decision, assuming they come in with a complete application around September 8th, they'd be seeing an approval or denial from the hearings officer by mid-November. And there's a little bit of slip between, you know, if they turn it in beyond a certain point, we can't send out notice the same day. So there's a couple days either way that may slip. We can't give you fixed dates, but mid-November. Advantages of that are that it's the hearings officer is an independent lawyer who's retained by the county but not a county employee. And they're generally, hearings officer hearings have a perception of being unbiased. You know, the hearings officer is there as a lawyer looking at the black and white of the law, and people have their day in court, as it were. You know, they get to speak in public. Hearings officers are very good at making people feel heard. And they also are very knowledgeable about legal issues. So, you know, that when a decision goes through a hearings officer, it's much less likely to be overturned on appeal at a higher level. You've had an expert lawyer look at this as a matter of first impression. And so the decision tends to be more robust as it goes forward. In contrast, another method that's been discussed is have the staff do an initial review of the materials. In that case, we would take in the application, allow 12 days for public and agency comments, and then write a decision, and that decision then has a 12-day appeal period associated with it, so that would come out in, that 12-day appeal period would finish out right at the beginning of October, October 2nd, October 4th area. The major difference between that decision and a hearings officer decision is that a staff decision is appealable to a hearings officer for $250. The state of Oregon sets that amount, the threshold's low. The idea is that, you know, staff is, I mean, we're bureaucrats. We're not independent lawyers who are, you know, there's questions about our impartiality. There can be questions about our impartiality. There can be questions about our legal experience. So that threshold for an appeal is set low intentionally. The cost is very low for it. The hearings officer, in contrast, would cost something like $2,750 to appeal. That's a much higher appeal cost because of an assumption that an independent lawyer who's very familiar with the law has made a decision, and so that appeal has a much higher cost associated with it. So two different decisions at that point. Either one. So if the staff's decision is appealed, it would normally go to a hearings officer, which would then start that same 70-plus day hearings officer process. There is an option that's allowed under the code where the Alpine City Council can directly call up that matter. So any matter that has received an initial decision, either from staff or the hearings officer, and the Alpine City Council says, we would like to hear this, you can call it up. And so one of the things that the BioGreen representatives had talked to me about was doing this initially as a staff decision with the full understanding that the city council would call it up to review it, to basically have that public hearing that needs to happen, or would be helpful to happen, to give both the impression and the factual occurrence of, you know, people having their day in court and being able to really flesh out the issues in a public forum. The advantage of that is that it could, that process would be, as we've laid out the timeline, it appears that process is 2 to 3 weeks shorter, and also has the advantage that it has Lapine City Council stamp on it. So rather than an independent hearings officer, you know, who's not from here, you know, that the final decision comes from the city of Lapine. I think that there's some advantage to that in terms of public perception of that, that this isn't something that the county has imposed from afar, but this is something that, you know, the people
here
have decided.
So it's 2 or 3 weeks shorter than the hearings are out.
Right.
Okay, but then what about the appeals on that?
So if you as the Lapine City Council go and hear this matter and make a decision, it's then appealable to LUBA, the Land Use Board of Appeals at the state level. And if it's appealed to LUBA and BioGreen is correctly characterized that a failure to get a start this year is a death to the project, any appeal to LUBA takes months and months. That's the end of the project if it goes to that level. As they've characterized their needs and as I've experienced LUBA appeals to that Land Use Board of Appeals at the state level.
What is their drop-dead deadline?
As they've characterized it to me, they have to make on-the-ground improvements in this calendar year. I wish they were here to speak to this. And that in practice, they'd really like to be pouring foundation in November. As you know, construction in December here may or may not be viable.
I thought there was a deadline for the funding.
Right, and my understanding is that it's December 31st.
Okay.
Okay, so if it goes to the hearings officer, can we speak with the two ways, hearings officer or the administrative decision, and public comment, and how many times the public could comment?
Sure. So in the hearings officer route, there would be a 12-day initial period when we would receive written comments.
Okay.
And then there would be a public hearing at which anyone could deliver written or oral comments directly to the hearings officer. So there would be both a multi-week written period and a hearing that they could participate in. Mm-hmm. It would be our anticipation that, assuming we could get a facility here, that we would conduct that hearing down here in Lapine, make it easy for residents to attend.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be two opportunities. The hearings officer can, during the public hearing, if he or she finds that there's new information or that additional time is necessary, they'll often leave a written period open after the hearing. So sometimes applicants will come to the hearing and say, oh, by the way, here's some other thing that we want to do or we want to talk about. And the public will say, wait, we haven't had any opportunity to review these materials or comment on them. The hearings also say, okay, well, we'll leave 2 weeks open for you to review these materials and provide your written responses to that. So they may have a period, again, after the hearing to comment on the application.
So that essentially is 3 times?
3 times.
Okay. And then for the administrative decision?
For the administrative decision, they would have the initial 12-day comment period. We would receive comments during that period, at which point I would plug my ears and write a staff decision. I'd take the information that was before me, then the box is closed. I look at it, I write the best decision I can, and then on the assumption that you would then call it up, there would then be once you had said, the staff decision is complete, we want to call this up, this decision, to review it ourselves. From that point that you'd made that declaration to the hearing would be an open written comment period. So there would be something like 24 or more days for written comment. And then, of course, at your hearing, the public could make oral testimony. And then, again, you too might choose to leave the written record open to receive additional information if you believe that you don't have the materials that you need at the hearing to make a decision.
So what I'm hearing is that essentially there's 3 comment periods on each process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If we didn't call it up, did they appeal to LUBA?
They would appeal to the hearings officer because they would be appealing a staff decision.
You have to pay the $2,700?
No, it's only $250 to appeal the staff decision.
To the hearings officer.
Right. And then if they in turn wanted to appeal the hearings officer decision to you, then it would be that $2,700.
What are the odds that this would have an appeal? Based on your experience.
I've been doing planning for 6 years here in Deschutes County, and when there is both either lawyered or professional opposition, and there's an issue that is likely to be non-negotiable. You know, certain things, somebody wants the house here instead of there, and neighbors are going to have their view ruined, and you can move the house. Those things are resolvable. When you have things that are going to have significant impacts, noise, water, visual impacts, the $250 appeal threshold isn't much to try and for someone to say, No, I want to appeal this. I think that staff had it wrong. $250. I would, based on the amount of interest that I've seen so far and the fact that people are contacting professionals, I would think that a $250 appeal fee would be fairly likely to expect.
So, see, to me, that you have to figure that into your what you're thinking here, because if in reality it's going to be appealed, and any time it's appealed, and we're not saying anything that they haven't figured out. You know, you just said it, and there's people in the room that are hearing it, and they can hear it online. So the fact is that if they appeal it, it goes beyond the dates for these guys to do what they say they have to have.
I think one of the keys is going to be if we go the administrative decision route, and we've kind of ironed out all these dates, say that decision's issued by ballpark October 4th. And this is a legal question we have to explore, but if the council votes to call it up before we receive an appeal, I think it goes to the council, and it wouldn't go to a hearings office.
That's correct.
And that's important, because as we've just projected some dates, if we receive a solid application on or about September 8th to the 10th, we would be able to issue our decision by about October 4th. We then have to, if you then, first or fourth, whatever, if you then called it up almost immediately, we then have to issue a 20-day notice. The papers never run it the next day. It's always 2 to 3 days. So ballpark, by the end of October, November 1st at the very latest, you could conduct your public hearing on it and either affirm the staff decision, change the staff decision however you saw fit, either that night or within however many days you wished to do so. That would be the fastest process possible.
That's why I'm trying to flesh you on that. I mean, yeah. I've been around this a long time, and yeah. I realize the local processes, whether it's us or who.
Yeah.
Generally, this kind of thing is well leaving us. In other words, going to LUBA. I mean, do you feel that having a hearing before the city council is going to keep folks that are upset over all the numerous issues, groups out of Portland, from taking it to LUBA, knowing that that causes almost the project to stop? Just filing it.
It can. It's a tough question. If Fire Green is able to respond to most of the issues, and I think sometimes just having a public hearing is a huge step. That as the we just do administrative decisions, we don't conduct a public hearing, we just accept public comments, and some people want to just have that day in court, as Will said. The public hearing is really what they want, and
right.
My goodness, we don't agree with the council's decision, the hearings officer's decision, but at least we set our piece and we're done. It's a good question. The key with the hearings officer, and say this cautiously, but when the hearings officer's decision is appealed for $2,700+, somebody has to be very serious about wanting to stop it. Mm-hmm. That's a significantly higher amount mm-hmm. to pay. And that hearings officer's decision, which say ballpark comes out November 15th, that's then appealed to the council. If that doesn't go on to LUBA, but then that decision wouldn't be able to make that decision until mid-December, and that's just a tricky deal. But
so when you say that if someone has objections and they're going to appeal it, doesn't that have to be based in law? Doesn't that have to be? It can't say like I don't like it or I don't want it in my neighborhood. It has to be based on some fact that you find in your administrative decision, right?
So there's a couple different ways that this works. And I want to put a little sidelight in here. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about an assumption of a public opponent being the appellant. You have to remember also that from a hearings officer perspective, it may be that the hearings officer finds that the BioGreen plant does not meet the criteria.
Right.
There may be persuasive argument. Mm-hmm. So the appellant could just as easily be BioGreen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to think of this both ways. But to your question about the appeal, so if a staff decision is appealed to the hearings officer, that they can appeal that for any reason, and the hearings officer will conduct a hearing for the $250. There doesn't have to be a criterion-based reason.
Okay.
When a decision is appealed beyond the hearings officer, so either the city council calls up a decision that has been appealed to the hearings officer, or the hearings officer has completed a decision and the city council then in turn asks to hear it, you'll receive what's called a notice of appeal, and you'll have a choice to either hear the appeal or not hear the appeal. So frequently, for example, the Deschutes County Board of Commissioners, if there's an application before them and they feel like this is a matter of law that we don't want to wade into, we think this should be decided at a state court, they can say we simply won't hear this appeal. And then the appeal, and then at the applicant's choice, can go forward. A significant portion of the appeal money is refunded that they pay towards getting the board or Lopine City Council's appeal, and then they can go forward to the state process at the Land Use Board of Appeals.
And if it goes forward to the state, it could be months. Is that correct?
Usually 6 months.
Usually 6 months.
To make a decision.
We've got others pending there right now. The county does.
Okay, so if we decided to go into the administrative decision, and we've had a lot of comments about the traffic issue, so how would you address that?
So we would take the information that was available to us from the applicant's traffic engineer, mm-hmm. public comments, comments from agencies such as ODOT, and based on our experience looking at previous cases that are similar, we would try to weigh out these impacts and questions, and in each case we try to produce a decision. We're trying to guess what LUBO would do, the Land Use Board of Appeals, at the highest level, if this was to be reviewed and called up before increasingly competent legal authorities, what answer would they give to the problem? So we look at their history. We say, okay, in the past when matters like this have come up, hearings officers, the Land Use Board of Appeals, the Board of Commissioners have looked at it and come to these sorts of conclusions. So based on the precedent that's available to us, the facts that are available to us, we would then look at the criteria that that falls in the county code and decide if that criteria is met or not.
Okay. I have a question about if BioGreen would contribute to some sort of mitigation on the impact. How does that happen if the study hasn't been concluded or even started? And usually, can you talk about, about proportionality and about how can they contribute to something that hasn't been determined yet?
This is an interesting issue. So suppose you have a case where you have known impacts and you'd like to mitigate them. So for example, they were going to, because of heavy traffic, and I don't know that this is the case I'm using as an example, because of heavy traffic, they were going to cause a certain amount of damage to a road. Or maybe a road wasn't suitable for the use given the type of traffic that they had proposed. Normally, what you would hope would happen would be a full mitigation, so that in the event that they were putting some sort of undue load on a public resource, a road or something like that, that resource would be improved and maintained such that it would there would be no net loss to the public as a result of it. In practice, there have been two major cases that I think both came out of California called Nolan and Dolan that have to do with rough proportionality. And what those cases have said is that, for example, if I am putting in a utility plant and there's 10 miles of road back to the highway, that it may not be roughly proportional to expect the utility plant to pave all 10 miles given that, maybe the 10 miles of road exceeds the total budget for the plant for, 2 years or something like that. And so there have been a number of Nolan and Dolan cases over the years, and there's some established methods to figure out what portion of a project, based on the portion of the impacts they contribute to the public resource that's damaged, what portion of contribution would mitigate those impacts. And what's key is that you need an impact that is somehow addressed by the county code, and that can be shown to be mitigated through some applicant action. And when you see unmitigated impacts, when you see people engaging in land use actions that have impacts beyond, their site, it's often because there's a difficulty connecting that. Maybe the county code isn't express enough about how to deal with those types of impacts. There can be the problem of proportionality that you raised.
Or another one could be the situation of timing. We hear there's a lot with destination resorts, is that destination resorts don't mitigate their traffic impacts. But in many cases, what a resort will do is they will put money into a fund to fund the improvements once they build out to a certain level or once the traffic reaches a certain level. But the thing is, that occurs at some point in the future, whereas the public begins to feel a few more cars, a little bit longer of a delay, or there's even an accident at the intersection, and boy, they didn't mitigate what they were supposed to. Well, actually, they have. The money's in the pot over here, but that extra, you don't build just 75% of another of a turning lane.
Right.
You either build it all or nothing, and when the money's available. And so that's the challenge, is that even if we have conditions of approval that if the trips hit da 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 da, then they shall do this. Well, they, you know, as they build out, maybe their business doesn't occur until such time. But there is some more traffic on the roads, and people have this at least perception that it's not as safe now.
If I understood what you said, if this is referred to a hearings officer, and we go through the process and he comes up with a decision, that decision is more likely to be upheld than without appeal and going to the, through the other process. Is that not what I heard you say?
Right, for two reasons. One of them is that the decision is more likely to be legally robust. So when an opponent, or so the, let's say we have a decision from the hearings officer, we're looking at it the opposite direction just to balance it out.
Yeah.
Let's say that the hearings officer denies this, and if BioGreen wanted to appeal that, they would talk to their legal counsel, and their legal counsel would say, look, this is a, you know, this is a defensible decision by a professional attorney who's very familiar with these matters. This decision will be more robust. Second is that a hearings officer decision costs $27.50 roughly to appeal forward. So you've got a robust decision that you would be appealing forward at greater cost. So the risk reward of that appeal is significantly different from one, for example, a staff decision where you've got staff who we hope we do our job right, you know, we do our best, but you know, I'm not a lawyer, and that the cost of saying I did it wrong is $250. So it's a significant difference there.
Irregardless of who makes the decision, you or a hearing officer, if that decision is yes, and it's appealed by anybody, okay, for either agency, am I hearing correctly that that is pretty much going to kill the project? What's the percentage of, what's your opinion that an appeal would, it, because if they don't start construction and have something that Uncle Sam can look at on the ground by December 31st, they lose all their money and it's all gone. So if there is an appeal, is that going to kill it, or
if there is an appeal, if there's an we take the administrative route. If you advise that we should take the administrative route, we will have under a normal scenario, we'll produce a decision by early October. If that's appealed, which would be naturally appealed to the hearings officer, the board could the Lapine City Council could intervene and call that matter up directly. At which point, it would be sitting before you as the decision makers on what day?
About early November. Sorry.
Early November. So an administrative decision plus an appeal called up by you would still leave some room in the timeline for a decision to be made.
But and that could be appealed too, couldn't it?
Yes.
Couldn't someone come back and if it went to us and we said yes, couldn't that also be appealed?
That could be appealed.
And that would in effect kill the project.
That would, wouldn't it?
Right.
A second appeal would, there would be not enough time.
If the hearings officer decision, rather, was appealed, that would come to you, and we would be into mid-December before we'd be sitting around the table talking about it.
I see.
Who pays that large fee to LUBA?
The appellant. So,
and unfortunately, the fee isn't very large to go to LUBA.
Oh, I thought
there's a large fee.
$27,000.
No, $2,750. Let me lay out the fees again. An appeal of an administrative decision done by staff is $250. An appeal of a hearings officer's decision to your city council is $2,750 roughly. It's a base fee plus a percentage of the previous application, between $2,500 and $3,000. The appeal on from there to LUBA, I never see that amount, but my understanding is that it's relatively low.
Okay.
To go on to the state, to the Land Use Board of Appeals.
I thought you said $20,000 or something.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so let's say that we went on the administrative decision side, and we have concerns about the traffic. And could we, in that period, that 12-day period, write, I guess, a council decision or maybe a consensus on you addressing that issue? How do we have the assurance that those are going to be addressed?
Okay, so suppose I write an administrative decision and I come to the conclusion that traffic issues are there are outstanding traffic issues that are not resolved, and I deny it.
Mm-hmm.
You could, in the time that precedes that, you could individually, or you could request that I go to the applicant and say, hey, we're going to come to a hearing here in the middle of November. This is going to be of concern to us. Please be ready to address these issues.
I think, to get back to one of your questions, sir, in the first 12-day appeal period, because I think that's what I hear you saying, is once we receive the application, the best thing would be for your interim city manager, for Rick, to work directly with us to say, these are the city's issues, these are the ways we would like to see them resolved.
Okay.
Have Rick at our meetings with our road department, with ODOT, et cetera, because the challenge is for you to begin to weigh in on what's in our decision. It could compromise your ability to then make the decision on appeal.
Okay.
Or on call-up.
Right.
But that's why you have your professional staff,
okay,
is to represent the cities, collect all of your views to us, and make sure that our decision reflects your
decision. I need to interrupt for a minute and let the record show that our mayor has shown up at 6:51, and the meeting will be turned back over to Mayor Shields.
I don't mind if you keep it.
You have it.
Thank you.
And thank you for the interruption.
Thank you.
Okay, I think I have a direction that I think that the best way to keep the project on its schedule is to do the administrative decision by staff to and then have our city manager work closely with your staff to address these traffic issues. In the event that it's either denied or an appeal, then I guess that we would immediately call it up here. So those are three steps that I think would be good.
Is it on record that the big problem that has been addressed or sent to you is traffic? Is that the only problem, or is there other things that's going to enter into this? Because the people that I've talked to, that is just one of the things.
Correct.
It's just one thing, and we're talking about several others.
Almost everyone is concerned about traffic, and then on top of that, most people are concerned with several other items: the potentials for the potential for air pollution, water demand, wastewater use, noise. Visual impacts, these are the usual ones that I'm receiving comments about.
Okay, so when we go through the administrative route, as Adele has outlined, our city manager is going to have to work with you and with BioGreen to address each one of these issues and address it in such a way that it satisfies you writing your decision. Is that correct?
That's correct. So in each case, I'll have a number of criteria. You know, one of the rules is that the site is suitable for the use intended given transport, given access. So I'll receive a pile of information about traffic, and I will be asked to make a decision. Is this site suitable based on traffic? And so I'll look at what their engineer has. I'll look at the comments we've received. I'll look to our expert partners, our senior transportation planner on staff at ODOT, and then take those facts in combination based with precedent that on other similar applications and make a cumulative decision on them. But each comment is addressed in the decision. So, you know, any issue that's raised will be addressed in the decision, and I'll either say that we have no rules that apply to this, you know, that's an interesting comment, but there's no rules that apply to it, yes, this rule applies, and here's how your comment's being addressed. Either that your comment, you're asking for a particular outcome and that's the outcome you're getting, or you're asking for a particular outcome and you're getting some of it based on a weighted understanding of the materials that are before me, you know, the expert opinions. And so we attempt to balance those out when they are relevant to a criterion that has to be addressed.
Well, as far as traffic is concerned, there's nothing that can be done to change the traffic. They've already committed to 24 semi trucks a day, 5 days a week, and they've all already committed to using the back roads of Lapine, no. Not the main roads, not
yes they have,
not Highway 97, and not Finley Butte, except for the material that's coming from Oak Ridge and from Portland. But all the wood material is coming out of Highway 31. They've agreed to come down Darlene. If they're planning on running 24 trucks a day, there's nothing we can do about it. I mean, they won't run less because then it would be economically unfeasible. If they only had to run 10, they don't run 10. They have to run 30, they didn't run 30.
Okay, so I have information that disagrees with that. I think that 70% of the 24 trucks or truck per hour, which would be 24, is going to go through 97 in rate.
Well, now that's not what they said at the BioBay meeting that we were at 10 days ago. They didn't say that.
They said the only trucks using 97 Finley Butte would be the ones that are bringing the non-forest products from Oak Ridge and Eugene and Portland.
I think you're right. I think they did say that.
Yeah, and there would only be like one or two trucks a week. And we already get 650 semis downtown Lapine already right
so
now.
So that's
today.
One thing that we're going to have to clear up. Mm-hmm.
And right. Certainly yes. What they've said up until this point is in no way binding on them. Mm-hmm. When they make an application, they're going to say, we'd like to have this plant that's going to have these type of transportation demands, these hours of operation, these types of materials, this type of noise production, and we'll approve or deny that application. So until they make a formal application declaring what their use is, they're in no way bound to something that they'll
give. What percentage did you say we're going to be?
70%.
It's going to be back roads and 30.
No, 70% would be on the intersection of First and Reed.
But that's not what they said at the meeting,
and that's not what they said here in council.
Yeah.
I asked them that same question three times in council. Three times they answered the back roads on Darlene.
That's what I have got.
And now, unless they've changed their mind,
yeah.
I don't know.
I have a suggestion that. We're going to no doubt get to be able to debate this at a hearing when it's appealed and not hold the hearing now, just to make sure that there's just less said the better here. I think the decision that you needed to make was give me direction, mm-hmm. and I think Adele's on the right track. It's advice I would give is go ahead and make the administrative decision, knowing it will be appealed, or assuming it will. We would immediately call it up. We would then hold a hearing here, and then I think that the council can hold your heads high. There are certain things you can't control. And if someone appeals it to LUBA, it is outside of your control. The council and you two gentlemen who worked hard on this are not responsible. I mean, you can only go so far. I mean, this is a company. There's laws out there. The U.S. government has grants and loans, and they put deadlines on it. Those are things that nobody in this room has any control over. And I think you make sure that you've done all you can. And so I think by calling it up, if it comes, we call it up. You hold your hearing. You pass it on. The chips fall where they may. And there's really nothing that any of you can do, and you can hold your head high to the citizens of Lapine that you tried your best. And you may decide that you vote against it at that hearing you have. Mm-hmm. You may decide, you know, we don't want this in the community. Mm-hmm. But, you know, BioGreen can't guilt you into you've done something. You've tried your darndest. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the direction that I hear you saying, mm-hmm. and I think that's probably the wisest. And again, we're not voting, so if we'd like to hear from another councilman as to a direction, then I can advise them. They'll want it in written form via email or something they know, and we can move on, and then they have a direction.
Sounds good. Yeah. I like the
idea. Mm-hmm.
Decision.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, we have to do something, and that's probably mm-hmm. the quickest way to get the ball rolling, to get some action, whichever direction it's going to take going.
I know she's been doing a lot of work on it with you two and a lot of communication, and she's very up to date, so I would trust that.
Okay, I'll send you an email based on the what I'm hearing from my leaders, and then you can talk to me about when you want me to do what you want me to do.
Yeah, I think that sounds great, and so we'll be in close contact with you as we go forward over the next several weeks, and then I think what we should do is, once we issue our decision and you call it up, and we can be here at that meeting when mm-hmm. you choose to do that, that we then schedule a work session to prepare you for the hearing so you understand all the issues that went into,
sure. we got
into
a special,
the decision and
special
all that
night
stuff.
For that, and, you know, give it, so you got a couple hours to mm-hmm. roll through all of it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the great things is you may discover that really it all comes down to one or two issues. There are a lot of issues now, but maybe several issues are addressed in the process, and maybe the appeal or the call-up really only focuses on one or two issues that need to be resolved by you, and you affirm, or the other issues are resolved to everybody's satisfaction. So,
okay.
Great.
Thanks, you guys are doing a great job.
Thank you very much.
You're kind of thrown into a mess. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm still not sold that going the other route might not be a better way because it could be held up more.
Kind of a close call.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, I apologize for coming in late. Myself on track here. I guess we're moving on to number 5, Charter Committee and Resolution Discussion.
That's
Rick?
Number 5. I think she, well, mine's number 5. I don't know if she numbered everybody's. That's the resolution. I emailed it to you and you got it in the
yeah,
package.
Yeah, so I said number 5.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess that's yours, right?
Yeah. That's the resolution that creates the committee. We already know who the 9 are because we did those last time. And this is kind of the legal thing that does it. I think the biggest issue is the guts of it is our normal now, which has become our template. So lots of the stuff doesn't ever have to get changed. But is December 31st is go down to item 4. We need to have a recommendation on report December 31st for a couple of reasons. One is we do have one member who's running for the city council, and then in here it says you cannot serve on both, which is good. In other words, you don't want one person serving on the committee because councilmen are not on the committee. You don't want one person, and then they turn around. And so if we were running in January and February, you really can't have them at the Charter Committee and then a week later serving in your role. But the other thing is, we can get it done by then. So it can be done, and then the new council will be able to hold the hearings on that we have to go through in January, February. And I think we need to get it to the assessor. We're going to check on that. Like about the 1st of March, so we really don't have a lot of time. So I think, just like this stuff, in case there's a goof-up, we just want to make sure. So I put December 31st.
Do you think that, what if the council appoints alternate?
We'll still want to be done by December 31st. This
right.
says the resolution, so, but I need to be done by the 31st. But you
right.
can make it longer if you want.
No. But the double insurance.
Well, you know what? We just run with 8. They just resign from the committee, and just like, because not everyone will show up every meeting.
True.
They just don't show up.
Okay.
And so I kind of thought about the alternate thing. I think bringing someone on for one last meeting. Yeah, you just run. We got 9. You just run with 8.
Are those 9 online, posted online?
What's
nine,
that?
Numbers? I haven't.
Well, we proved them here, but I don't know.
Right.
Are the 9 people online?
They're supposed to be getting online. They're in the process of getting online.
Okay.
I just included for you. So this is going to come. We'll vote on this. This actual resolution will be at our meeting in 2 weeks. We're going to start meeting then about a couple weeks after that. In the meantime, I'm going to find out when they can all meet and, you know, that kind of stuff. Because there's 9 people to herd. Which is
supposed to be something in the Eagle. There should be something in the Eagle next month too.
Okay.
I just what I handed out to you, so what I'm working on, if your little black, your colored document says council, you just see what my plan is. And that is I'm making a PowerPoint. Mine is the thick one, which still has more thickness to go, but what you have in front of you where it says council, that's just one section, just randomly picked. It's chapter 3. What I did is I took the template charter that the League of Oregon Cities has. I lapined it. I did nothing except put in City of Lapine. And so this, and because this is the one you start with, you have to have a base to start. So what you'll notice is, and then I went through and I underlined what I thought were the hottest issues. Now everyone's going to have a copy of the whole thing, so you know they can obviously underline where they want. But an example of this, the council consists of a mayor and four councilors nominated. I underlined it, then I put a little explanation of maybe what the issue could be. Is a mayor selected from the council or elected, number one? How large a council, 5 members or 7 members? Then, section 8, it says the mayor is a voting member of the council. Do you want the mayor to vote or only vote to break ties? Those are just kind of the normal options that are out there. Then you go to the next page, you'll see section 7 says the council consists of a mayor and four councilors. And I picked these four cities, but you can all, you know, these people can do research on anyone they want. I mean, I can't put out 300 cities. So I picked the city of Damascus because it's the last city incorporated closest to Lapine, so it's a new city. Then I picked Culver, who is a little smaller. Sisters is a little bigger, both in the region. And then Prineville kind of goes up to that 8,000 to 10,000 population. And what I did is, you will see Prineville, in their charter, has a mayor and 6 councilmen. They elect them all at large from within the city. Damascus has a mayor and 6 councilmen. Culver has a mayor and 6 councilmen. Now, they just changed their charter. They were a mayor and four councilmen, like the template says, up until just recently. They've always ran with 5. Sisters is a 5-person council, elects their mayor from within, like you are doing currently. So there you got it. That group gets to talk about it. You want a 7-person council, 5-person council, you want your mayor elected, you know, that's what they get to work on.
What's the population of Culver?
1,300. They have a K-12 school, 1,300. Rural Fire District protects them, just like you have. We'll find they're actually a lot more similar than you realize. They can't afford their own police, and they contract to the county.
Wow. And they're...
But they just did that. Yeah. They've been a city for 100 years. They just did it.
Yeah.
So you don't have to do it in your first 4 years.
Yeah. No, I was just wondering, you know, trying to find 7 councils.
No, and I, you know, but that's the group gets to decide that.
Good.
And then the next one just goes, the next one is a mayor voting. Here, you know, the mayor votes everywhere. In Madras, the mayor only breaks ties. The net effect is the same.
Sure.
The net effect is the same. The mayor then more runs the meeting. The mayor never votes unless there's a tie. I didn't vote once in 2 years. Because we'd have three to two votes, stuff like that. Or someone absent, because we have 7. But
did they do that on purpose so you wouldn't vote?
No. Yes. So anyway, and I'm doing that on every page. So what I'm going to put this into a PowerPoint. So we're going to lower the screen. The public can be here. And we're going to start at chapter 1 and get through every night. I figure if we spend a couple hours, we'll go as far as we go. Then I'll go make the changes that they come up with. Change it in here. We'll continue through. Then we'll go through the new draft, work through it, then have a hearing. The committee will have some sort of public hearing.
Uh-huh.
And hear what people say. And at some point, they would turn it over to you and say, here, this is our recommendation. And then you get to hold a hearing in January. And so on. Now, what I'm going to do with the whole thing of the outside of the city, since there isn't that anywhere and it affects a lot of boxes, I'm going to kind of have just supplemental pages we'll just go and click to, because I can't put it in little boxes because it affects lots of things when I start going through here. That'll be a more interesting discussion than I think people think. I think people think, well, we want to have people from out of town be on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some, when I start reading these charters, you will find I can see to a degree why people haven't done it. It sounds simple, but it does complicate things in about a lot of places. But it's doable. I just talked to a city manager in Forest Grove today, and he called me, and he said, you know, that's interesting. He says there's some merit to it. And then other people, of course, say absolutely not. So what I'm going to do is take all the places that it would affect the charter and kind of have a whole list of that, because there's just really is a lot to that. And all the other thing is there's no template to follow. That we're going to have to go through and have Jeremy and them legalize that, because there is no copying to do on that. So that's the process. If you think that's okay, that's how we'll move forward. That will be, you'll get approved this resolution in 2 weeks.
I have one question I have, and Ken, don't think I'm picking on you, but
okay.
If Ken is serving on this committee, and you come up with a final draft, and he's elected to the council, and he's going to be hearing or sitting on a council hearing on further input on this draft, isn't he sort of going to be have a preconceived idea as to what should be, and that might to affect how he votes at that time? Again, I'm not...
I think we all would have anyway, don't you? I mean, that's the point that we're getting to, is for everyone to have their idea throughout, you know, to get their thoughts throughout the process.
He'll be overruled.
Because you would, you would have as much input as a counselor as he would, because if you didn't like something that the committee came up with, then you could change it or, you know, do some sort of suggestion as to a change on it.
Well, maybe I look at things wrong, but I look at it that we're giving a committee to an opportunity to bring us the best possible document they can come up with. And in my opinion, if that reflects what the city of Lapine wants, if that's the reflection that they come up with, then I think there should be very few changes, if any, in it. It should go pretty much as is, as long as it meets the criteria that the majority of the people in Lapine want.
It probably will go, it could almost go 100%. I mean, there's some truth that there could be a little tweaking, or maybe you come up with something. You know, when it gets to conflicts of interest, I guess I look at it a couple ways there. One is, he's serving on a committee that, in fact, while he's serving, he is yet not a city councilman, so there's no conflict. The day he becomes a councilman, he's not on the other one. The other one's done. It's kind of like I got a job, and then I go to a new job. My loyalty moves to this. It's a minimal issue, but when it comes to conflict, each of us can hold, we could start having a mirror here. Really, that's who decides on conflicts. The person has to look in the mirror and decide, do I have a conflict? And should I declare a potential conflict, which just means... Some people could argue I have one, but I don't know that it's, you know, a real one. Or do I have a legitimate real conflict?
Well, Ken already stated that he felt that he could serve on both. I mean, isn't that what
sure.
you said?
Yeah.
You
know? I don't see it, if I may, it being such a great issue as a conflict. It's just like Rick has said, you know, you go from one job for the city to another. When it comes to the front of the council, it's going to have worked out. I can't envision why I would have a reason to want to see it changed. But if it came up to be, you know, the council decided that we don't like this way, we want to have it this way, that's up to the council. And then I would only be one person if I said, no, I like it the other way. I just one vote.
And the other thing is, you are sending this to the voters. So normally, when you pass an ordinance, you're making it law. In this case, we're sending it to the voters. And the voters get to decide if they like it.
That's the ultimate.
Yeah, well, that helps. And also, some of you may come to some of these meetings occasionally. So different ones of you may pop in, you know. Good question, probably.
Yeah, I think it's... I understand where you're coming from with that. A person who is part of the creator of something is then later on turning around and voting on it. But it's going to be, what was it, a 9-member board creating it? I think I'd have different feelings about it if it were maybe just 3 people or even five.
I think Mr.
That's good discussion, I think.
I think Mr. Mullenweg has enough integrity to do what he's been asked to do.
I'm not gaining anything out of this.
No,
I mean, there's no gain for me out of it.
It'll all be done.
Side, so
it'll all be done by the time that comes beside you.
Was that
like us?
I don't have a problem with being on it at all.
We're all gaining something. Ulcers.
And less hair. Okay.
You were going to change that December date, you said?
No. No, I don't think we need to change that. That we should be, really, we'll be okay because we'll have October, November, December to.
Okay,
so and we've got a heck of a good, appears to be a good nine group of people that are going to kind of get into it. And what I discovered, I got into it too, the charters are getting thinner than I realized. The new charters are even getting thinner. So some of them were seven pages. I mean, you know, you can only spend so many hours on seven pages.
I like lean and mean.
Yeah. And so much of the time. Yeah.
I like it.
And then that way we can use it for our community presentations and I can tweak it and change it. Mm-hmm. So when we go, like, we go to the senior center or go down to wherever we go for larger meetings, if we want to one time, we can put a nice power. I have a PowerPoint projector of my own. And we can do a thing, even if there's five people there. I think because it's a charter, we want to make sure this is your constitution and this will be with you. And it's really the basis of how this city will operate, the foundation, and we need to treat it with that. You know, if five people show up and it was a waste of doing it, I think you do it.
We need to stir up interest in the community over it.
That's for sure. I think we could get some people, we can work on getting some people out for it.
Well, that's something I was thinking about. We keep wondering how can we get the word out to people on things. The banners on the poles.
There isn't a single one.
No, there's
not. Wouldn't that be a place for the city to put up notification of things?
No.
People driving.
I thought we turned that over to Mr. Varco's
I drove by today and there's not a single banner on a single
No, they're all empty. They've been empty for 2 weeks.
I think they're preparing to put up for the 100-year celebration.
Okay. Are they? Yeah. Well, it would be appropriate if, since we gave the Chamber of Commerce the authority to do that, that they could, but just by telephone, let Luana know some kind of a time frame so that, hey, they're going to be up in a week or, you know, so it'll be done. I mean, people have asked me.
Where'd they go?
Huh? Do you like that idea?
No.
Why?
Banners are very expensive to make, time consuming to change, and our meetings come and go weekly. And so that's really not a place for public notices, the banners on the light poles. Nice idea.
Well, public notices were never intended for the light poles. They were intended to be sold to the business.
Yeah,
right.
Advertising.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I know you're just, I'm teasing you, but you know, that wouldn't work.
Stick on letters.
You know, the banners are, actually the wind load that's required for those, they're spendy.
Yeah.
And they're not easy to take. You have to get a boom truck. Got it. You have to put the cones out, change each one. I mean, there's actually work, a lot of work.
Well,
and another thing is going down the road at 35 is probably not when you should be reading notices.
You know, I wasn't thinking of like a, you know, full page notice or anything or changing it weekly. Something where, you know, you want to get the word out to people, just a short little blurb, and it's something that they need to be thinking about over the next 6 months. That sort of thing.
We can fill the room again if you'd like.
That is something that we always struggle with is how to get the word out to people.
Consider postcards, bulk rate.
Well, once you have sewer and water, what most cities do is you put your meetings on the bill.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's another advantage of the merger.
Right.
So you'll put on there, and when they get their September bill, you get it the first part of September, say, for example, and you put regular council meeting 7th and work session on the 18th, and that's on those. You can put all
and
kinds
hearings
of things
coming up or
yeah,
anything
so
like that.
So
yeah,
that's another advantage. And you're already mailing out something anyway.
Yeah.
But some people don't get water bills.
Well, not everyone. I mean, nothing's for everyone. You got the cable TV, you got everything.
I was thinking maybe Mid-State you could reach an agreement because everybody uses electricity, not garbage, you know.
Yeah.
So
they all worked.
Good idea.
next is these, just these contracts, and these will be on our legal approval. I just wanted you to get them if you had any questions. The first one is Little D, and this is just for our maintenance, a couple hundred dollars a month for our maintenance of our website. You know, websites, as you know, as a sewer water district doesn't work because they switched. I've been through this. If any of you have done websites, the background behind a website is proprietary, meaning it's owned by those companies. And you have to spend thousands for someone to redo your website. And you may want, you'll find a website someday, but you will spend thousands doing that. This one's already been created. We got our audio on there now. We've got our mints. I mean, actually, compared to some other cities, are much bigger than you. You're doing well. I'm pretty proud of what, I'm impressed with what you have. So, unless there's a bunch of complaints over the website that's beyond, you know, someone missed an agenda up here, little things that can happen, it's a pretty good website for $200 a month. And so this is not to exceed $2,400. And they will do everything. Now, we're going to change a bunch of web pages and they charge a little extra. But this is to maintain it and do what we do on a normal basis. We look back the last couple of years and we've spent about $2,500 a month. Excuse me, a year is about what we'd spend. So.
I have a couple of questions. So, you don't have the authority to enter into a contract less than $5,000?
Well, probably. But I, but you guys like, and I just, that's why I brought it here, and it's going to be on the consent agenda. So if you don't have any heartache over it.
Okay. Then the second thing is that, do we have a service contract with Little D?
Well, we did. What they had before, they had it all combined, but it's just an hourly. They just say, well, if we come do repairs, we're going to charge you this much an hour. Well, they have, it's not a special deal, it's just their rate. So,
because last month we had, I think it was four different invoices paid at four different times, and it came up to $2,400.
We were buying things, I'm assuming. Right. See, a lot of the laptop and capital stuff, you go to Bi-Mart to buy it or wherever you buy it, you know, you're going to have a bill for it. So it was, you know, we got the laptop, and which I use all the time, and those things.
And the setting it up.
And then they had to come in and set it up.
Yeah.
Because getting into the system here is, you know, again, it's not like me going home and just doing it. So they have to come in and get it to where it works.
So it's just a little confusing as to... So why didn't they just bill it all in 1 month and then, like, you know, usual?
Oh, you know, different companies, I have no idea this, but, you know, some companies will send out a monthly statement and then everything would be on there, and others, because they're hoping, that's just how they do, they want paid quicker. Now, it doesn't affect how we pay, but if there are a lot of places, if you get a bill on the 10th, they'll pay it. I get one the 18th. I have companies I deal with that I get a bill every 7 days because they want their money. In the course of the city, we're only paying monthly. So we just take the four bills, but it becomes more confusing. I agree with you that when it's like that. But so you have to just take those four, add them together. You didn't write four checks, did you, or did you?
She did.
Mm-hmm.
That's because when they come out and work on it, they leave the bill right there.
Yeah.
And so it's just how
we don't have that many bills, so it's okay. At some point, someday, you'd probably just write one check at the end of the month.
Yeah.
You just save them up and then write them a check.
I think that if it's like if it becomes a habit, I don't think it's gonna look good if we have, you know, 95 checks per year going to
Well, we don't want them sitting on $1,000 laptop either, holding the bill until we decide to pay them. So, you know, it's kind of a first.
Which is understandable.
Most companies are okay with 30 days to get their payment and everything.
The other one is Deb Oakman, and Jeremy's reviewed it, and hers is the flat going to be $4,750 for the year, and you divide it by 12. And that's a flat fee to staff or planning commission, come to the meetings, and then if we get an application for anything, she reviews it, handles it, takes care of it, and that's pretty cheap, because I figure one planning commission, the commission meetings are 2 hours, she's got to drive down here, so she... You know, at $95 an hour, she's not getting much. So, in other words, her rate is 95, but it doesn't go over. It doesn't matter if she spends twice that.
So she's just paid by this contract above and beyond the code?
Yes, that was a grant.
Right. Okay.
And so they've been coming. What happens is you get to these meetings, and then we half our meeting is spent on things that have nothing to do with the grant. So they're kind of volunteering as our planner.
Yeah.
And they've done it for a year.
Yeah.
So anyway, no one has any more questions. These will be. We'll approve those that are asking. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, the old employee handbook. Now, see, because you had such long on the other one, you're not going to want to spend any time, I know. So maybe we can go, what I'll do is, if we just want to go chapter by chapter, and then you tell me if any of you got heartburn, I can also, we can go quick. I mean, to get a lot of this is normal.
Are we in the timeline?
Well, we've had it out for a couple. Well, no.
No, I mean with the time.
At the meeting?
Yeah.
Well, no, just people start to get nervous at 8:00 always. So I was going to spend an hour on this. So.
Okay.
No, we can be here all night.
Okay. We're looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. I'll stay as long as you guys are here. If you want to go to page one. The welcome, the mission, the purpose, the reservation of rights. Probably page two talks about applications, I-9s, W-4s. Section three there is harassment. First of all, the staff and I went through this. We spent three different meetings. We spent about an hour each time. And then I marked up some things. They may have some comments. Some of them they want me to make them because, you know, they don't want to say it. We didn't have any comments on the sexual harassment sections. The complaint procedure.
So, we did have a comment on the background investigations.
Okay.
Can't you just do that first word? I mean, that first sentence. The city may conduct criminal background investigation, and then just that kind of leaves it a little bit more flexible. Instead of all specific criminal convictions that reasonably relate to the applicant's employment fitness and to perform. That way it gives a little more flexibility.
Yeah, we can take that off, that last sentence.
Yeah.
The such behavior.
Well, I was thinking during the applicant's pre-employment screening process or for cause to identify applicants or current employees.
Well, that's all one sentence to get rid of
such.
Yeah.
Okay.
So just get rid of such.
Yes.
Okay.
Where is she at?
She's on page two.
Yeah.
Page 2B, right?
2B. 2B. So. Is everyone okay with removing that?
What do you remove it?
The last sentence. Such behavior, when identified, will limit the city's risk in employing those individuals who may cause. Really, I don't know why they're saying it's telling you it's limiting it. I mean.
I was saying just all the way to the word on the first sentence, during an applicant's pre-employment screening process, or for cause to identify applicants, or for current employees that have specific criminal convictions that reasonably relate to the applicant's or employee's fitness to perform the particular job applied for.
Where do you want to stop it? You just tell me and then I can read it. Where do you want the dot?
The dot. The city may conduct criminal background investigations, period.
At any time? During applicants. Because that would cover current.
Well, I think the rest of that needs to be there. This is talking about pre-employment.
This is so specific. Or for cause. Well, I think we definitely need that in there where it says...
and or current employees.
Employee or for cause.
And it's saying it's got to reasonably relate to the applicant. Yeah. I thought maybe that last sentence we didn't need. Such behavior when identified will limit the city's risk. That doesn't really, employee doesn't care about that. But
we need to go to the paragraph before that.
On applicants or current employees.
Okay. Yeah.
It is no longer allowed to obtain credit information.
Right.
So we need to strike that.
I'll find out what the wording is now.
I think it is only if you're directly handling money. It's a new law in the legislature.
Yeah, because of there have been so many problems in the last.
Well, it says any, you know, any Oregon applicable laws, because you have a treasurer or someone, you can check things on some people. In other words, if I'm going to McDonald's, maybe I can't, but if you're going to handle $1 million a year at the city, you maybe can do some of that. And so what this is saying, I think it's saying, in other words, it's got to meet the law.
Yeah.
Whatever the law is.
It's a brand new law. It
doesn't define the law in here. It just says you have to meet the law.
Yeah. I think the sentence clarifies itself.
Well,
the city may obtain credit information, and then it explains under what conditions.
We'll check on that. Wording?
Okay. Reason.
Okay.
Says in accordance with the Federal Credit Reporting Act.
Yeah. So you always have to fight.
And any other applicable federal or Oregon
law. You don't have to worry about it anyway, because it's in there, but it should be in there because it tells the applicant that it might.
We're going to check on this.
Yeah.
But you would have to give permission, I believe. There was an article in the paper recently. Let them know that you're going to do that, and they have a right to.
That's part of the importance of laws.
Apparently, for bonding now, you can't have your credit checked. They're not allowed to do that unless you're directly.
So you will.
Yeah, I'll see what the law is. This is from the insurance company. This was their wording.
Well, if it's their wording, it's probably pretty legal.
Well, it's.
But it could be recently changed. Definitely. We'll check on the law there. Back to B. I think the paragraph's pretty good. I would maybe the last sentence. I think it's too short to go to Adele, what you said. Just to have a 5-word sentence. The city may conduct background investigations.
On applicants or current employees.
I think the way it's worded actually gives some sort of a level of comfort to the applicant that the city isn't going to be digging into everything. It has to relate to employees' fitness to perform the particular job applied for or the employee's current position. If I were an applicant or an employee, I'd like to see that wording in there.
Any other comments? We have 20-some pages to go through. Two paragraphs. So this is one of these things you need to speak up and silence this kind of agreement to leave it. You are going to have to speak up. Or else.
I'll agree.
Okay. I wondered about the random drug and alcohol testing. Did we figure that's mostly just for drivers of commercial vehicles?
We're looking. That's one we're going to look into, and we'll send you something out on is the drug and alcohol testing type stuff.
Okay.
Being as that affects somebody's job performance, whether they're in the office or whether they're anyplace else, I think it should stay in.
What's that?
Drug and alcohol.
Well, it's not in there.
It's not in there. I was just wondering.
So she'd emailed me, and that was one of her comments, and so I sent that to Jeremy. Said, where can we grab a paragraph that's legal on that meets the law? And so he has one that he likes. He says that it's a private client's policy, so he was going to cut and paste.
Well, that makes sense, being that we have a vehicle.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Section 3, harassment. Then there's sexual harassment. Complaint procedure. One of the things we have to cover, we have the complaint form, and that is Exhibit B. It references if you have a complaint, the employee fills out a complaint form, and we will have a complaint form, which kind of, I don't know if you have one now, but it doesn't matter, we'll be having a new one. And we saw it somewhere, didn't we? Yeah.
I'd like to raise the issue on the complaint procedures and about designating the mayor.
If an employee is uncomfortable harasser, the employee must promptly report offending behavior, whether the behavior is directed toward the employee personally or to another employee, to the city manager by the completion and submission of this form. If the complaint concerns the city manager or the employee is uncomfortable reporting it to city manager, the employee must bring the situation promptly to the attention of the mayor by the completion and submission of the form. So if they don't want to bring it to me or because it's about me, they take it to the mayor. After receiving the notice of that, negotiation will be promptly initiated by the city manager or the mayor, depending on if it went to her or him, to gather the pertinent facts after investigation and pleading, determination will be made by either me or the mayor, normally would be the city manager, regarding an appropriate resolution. If warranted, disciplinary action up and including termination to the extent possible.
I just think that we could put maybe a council designee. Because what if we have an HR manager in our midst? Would it make any sense for to bring to the attention of the mayor? Because now in this particular issue, let's say if it was a sexual harassment, mm-hmm. and there are very specific state laws on how you deal with that, mm-hmm. and this HR director might know how to deal with it better than the mayor.
I think that would probably be, I would hope that as the city's internal structure changes and the city would gain an HR director, then this would be reviewed and that would be worked in there. Or I mean, is it best to put it in there now?
I would put in HR. Cities of 25 employees may not have an HR director. I mean, you know, you're a long, long ways from an HR mm-hmm. director. So, I mean, and to start putting HR director, you're going to find a lot of places you put an HR director. I mean, if you're going to have one, because they would deal with tons of these. It says city manager all over. And because that's really the system for the next decade you will have. This thing will be changed with sewer and water. I mean, we're going to be going through this again because of what they bring. But, I don't see an HR person here anytime.
I would say to change that to council designee.
Well, are you saying that the problem with that, are you saying at the beginning of the year, every January, then the council is going to say, who is our designee person that someone goes to if there's a complaint, and is that valid for a year? I mean, because...
Well, last time we did this with that disastrous results. Is that when someone who did not have any employment experience tried to intervene with personnel issues? I mean, do you really want to go there again?
Well, but how do you? What I don't know. How do you? The mayor is elected. Either with our charter, they're going to be elected as mayor, or they're going to be appointed by the five of you to be mayor. To me, that vote says they are a leader for this cycle. And therefore, they are next in the hierarchy. That's just a fact. I mean, you can't rule by committee on everything. And when you elect your mayor, whether you appoint them from you or the voters elect them, the mayor is at the top of that pyramid. And that's, you know, you may disagree with them, and then the mayor has to take the heat. If the mayor screws that up, then the mayor takes the heat. Now, what the mayor should do is call, if it's a complaint, say against me, she should be calling our attorney and or the LGPI, the folks we've got who can help us with labor issues, and say, hey, I got this complaint, you fax it to them or email it to them, say, what do you think I should do with this? The mayor's been elected and they can screw up, and the voters decide if they want them back.
Okay. Well, generally speaking, I can see your point. Just specifically,
just you know,
I just had an issue.
Right.
But it could work just as well to write in the mayor or the mayor's designee, because you may have a mayor who has no training in that, does not feel.
Well, but then the employee then gets, do they get to decide who they go to? Mm-hmm. And then they pick out the councilman they want to go to.
Well, it is hard to cover every possibility.
Well, you can't cover everything. The most logical thing to do would be to say the mayor is the person responsible to receive any complaints of impropriety or sexual harassment or anything else. At that point, if it's a situation where the mayor can't handle it, let's say it's a male employee filing a sexual discrimination suit and the mayor is a female and he doesn't want to talk to a woman, okay, which it happens every day, then it would be up to the mayor or the council to take a vote to vote somebody else to hear it.
Well, see, that's kind of...
Somebody has to be designated as the person in charge. Somebody has to be the boss.
And then if it doesn't work, then it's up to the council to fix it, in my opinion.
Well, I think I agree with Rick that was, that it would be, in the traditional sense, it makes sense, is that to designate the mayor to, as with those duties. The head of the council, in a leadership position, just leave it as it is.
Good, that's a good idea. I agree with that.
That's only in the case that it is not taken to the city manager in the first place.
It's kind of your fallback.
So you've got him, you've got LGPI, which is stuff that we did not have before, so.
Right. But I think, you know, the concern was, what if the mayor isn't the type of person who has the abilities to handle that? Right. And we're all just ordinary people, you know. And some people don't have the training or the background or whatever. But then you could discuss that at the council, I would think.
There are handbooks,
In the case that Doug brought up, though, not wanting to go to a mayor that's a female, we might very well have a female city manager, too. There's nothing that says we're going to exclude interviewing a city manager.
Mm-hmm. I think that what Luana is saying is, first of all, there's the complaint. We're already going two into it. So the thing you're talking about is the third instance. At some point, you know, the fail-safe system is in place. If the city manager doesn't work, they got to go to the mayor. At some point, you're going to have to make your complaint. Yes. And even if you're a little uncomfortable, I mean, we're not kindergarten here. And, you know. But it's a valid, I understand your comment based on, you know, some history. Retaliation prohibited, saying that you can't retaliate on someone if they do, you know, file something. Equal opportunity employer, that talks about the veterans and natural origin, all the normal things that did come from our insurance company, so they're the ones that defend us in a lawsuit, so they know how to keep out of trouble. Complaint procedure, and this goes all, it's the same exact wording as the other one. It talks about city manager, and then in the other case it's the mayor. Retaliation is prohibited. General dispute resolution. So this is when we have a dispute, and how do we resolve them? And, you know, there's a lot to read there. If none of you have read it yet, that's pretty hard to do right here. One of the things that the staff did bring up, the first sentence under city manager, under D or B, any employee must bring a complaint, he or she may have the city manager within 5 days. Patty thought 5 days is fast. It could happen on a Friday, and by Tuesday your 5 days is up, and you haven't really maybe thought about it. And that 10 days is, in other words, because what this is saying, you only got 5 days to raise it. If you don't raise it in 5 days,
well, not only that, but the council approved it.
Yeah,
they approved the change from 5 to 10.
So, do you want that 10?
Aren't going to be 5 business days?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. We already made the decision. First 10 days.
Well, this is all the policy. The other one's going to be repealed. So, everything else gets repealed. This becomes our policy. So, do you want it to be 10?
I think 5 business days.
Okay, we hear a couple for 5 business days, and we've got some tens. Mayor?
What does staff, each of the staff individually, feel would work as staff personally? What do you think would work best? Any preferences?
Speak up.
We're beating a dead horse that was decided 10 days. There was a lot of discussion on that, so I think it should be up to 10 days.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, I think 10 days. Also, I did some checking around. That seems to be pretty common for most cities.
That's what our current staff is comfortable with, and, you know, they like having that allowance. And I guess we can let them speak for future staff, too.
Also, that gives enough time to maybe resolve it without having to go that route, you know, without having to be under a deadline.
Sometimes maybe you just think about it, cool off a little bit.
But also, we don't want it to sit there and fester.
Right, and we had discussed that too.
Then you get to the appeal process here, and here it does talk about the mayor or designee. So they, to where if that it could come to the council, could come to some of the mayor designates. In this particular.
That language was in our policy.
You know what? You know what? You know what? You know what? We did some cutting of that.
Oh.
Remember, you wanted a lot of that put in here. We
yeah.
cut a bunch and put that in here.
Oh, okay.
That doesn't mean that somewhere there isn't an error or two, because when you start cutting and pasting, it's easy to have a little. But, so
do
I think.
Do you want to make it consistent?
Yeah, this is your policy pretty much.
Okay, so do you want to take that language and make it consistent with the rest of the book and just put the mayor?
I'll ask about that.
Okay.
Where did you find that, Adele?
Right there under appeal.
B, appeal process, first line.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so
page 5.
The rest of that should be pretty good if it's one that you guys have been comfortable with. Retaliation C, we're on page 6. Obviously, you can't retaliate against employees. The at will, item 6. 90-day introductory period in their at-will employees, which means the city does not guarantee or promise an employee employment with the city for any specified period of time. Employee is employed at will, therefore they may be terminated or voluntarily resign any time for any reason or no reason, with or without cause or prior notice. Obviously, if you have a union, you wouldn't have that paragraph. Is that okay? At will? You're at will now.
But the second paragraph.
At will employment relationship between city and employee may not be modified except by express person a written employment contract signed by the mayor, any representative by any person contrary to employment at will relationship without whether verbal or written may not be relied upon. So in other words, you can't verbally, if some councilman tells you that you're not at will or somebody does, it's got to be written.
But does that say that that only like one person can enter into that contract, and that be the mayor?
But the mayor can't enter into a contract on their own. It just says they sign it.
Oh.
Signed by the mayor. If the mayor was to enter into a contract on their own without approval of the council, they would be in violating law.
Oh, okay.
Good question on that. The 90-day deal, that means they get through no benefits and things during that, you know.
That's pretty much standard.
Yeah. Number 7, and this is where this gets into a few other things. This is the employment categories and benefits and so on. So you have, 4 categories. Regular full-time, that's a full-time 40-hour employee. And they get your full benefit package, whatever it is. Okay. Regular part-time is an employee who works less than 40 hours, but they work 30, they work 22, they work 24. They would get, they're eligible to receive medical and dental benefits, but not the other benefits under this policy that's in here. A couple of things I thought maybe we should have would say, like, you get insurance at 20 hours and above. Here it just says, I don't know, does it say 20 hours in there? It doesn't. So if I work 5 hours, they could argue they get health insurance.
Yeah.
And I would think you want a 20 or 24 and up.
There would need to be a specific number of hours.
Usually, if you get half time and up, you get your health
normally
insurance.
Normally, it's 20. That's the normal.
Is that fair to folks?
Is that for the employee only, or is it for the employee?
It's whatever our benefit package is, and that's later in here.
That has to come up, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Your current policy is employee only, but
you know, a lot of times you have a real need for part-time employees, but they're not going to come and apply if at 20 hours they don't get benefits, and you might lose out on a good employee.
Most places do not give benefits under 20, because you think if you get a 10-hour person and you're paying $500 a month out on insurance, you pay it 12 an hour.
I don't think I said under 20. I said at 20.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, 20 and up. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, I was thinking
okay.
20 and
okay,
up.
Okay, yeah. No, I think you have to get, yeah.
Yeah.
There are some places that might do 24, some might do 30, but somewhere.
20 or 24, you know, because anyway, that's what I said. You know, you might miss out on a good part-time employee if you don't start
companies.
20 yeah. and up or 24 and up. Whatever.
There are companies that say you have to work 32 plus,
yes,
which is not fair. 20 is a fair number.
Or otherwise, most of them that I've been at have you pay in part of your medical if you're not full-time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, the other point...
There isn't anything wrong with using temp staff for part-time and do away with a lot of those. And then if you find the employee is good, you buy them from temp staff.
Right.
So that's a good idea. We use that all the time.
The other, but the bottom sentence is this regular part-time employee is not eligible to receive any other benefits. You got my email on Luana's change in hours. And, you know, I think that we only have two employees. I mean, it's like you sit here and say, you know, who's the audience for our 100 employees? Well, the fact is we have two and they're sitting here. So you have to look at it a little different. And this will change in probably a year because of the sewer and water folks coming on board.
Yeah, sure it will.
With the change in Luana's hours, she would like to acquire her PTO. Her PTO and some vacation time, I think that would be okay if we did it proportion. In other words, if you only work half-time, if you got a holiday, you don't get 8 hours, you get four. No, it's proportional. And again, I would say maybe above 20 hours, you're eligible for proportional. Then we don't do retirement. So we currently have no retirement. So that's a non-issue. It really would be holidays and vacation is sick leave type thing. So if you're half-time, would you get half?
Couldn't we have a separate agreement with Luana rather than to make a policy to accommodate her? Because it's just thinking is that, you know, making a part-time person with, you know, the medical benefits and a collection of the PTO time and all that other stuff, that's really kind of out of the ballpark.
Actually, that's not a bad idea. We could do something that because of Luana's tenure here and her position as our recorder, that we would do something with proportional, so on. But keep the policy where if you're not full time, you get health insurance, but you're not getting holiday pay.
Right.
You could do it that way. And then for future hires or other people that come on while we're operating under this, they would know that.
Yeah. Okay. So what would we be doing different for Luana that doesn't matter?
Right there, the last sentence says, a regular part-time employee is not eligible to receive any other benefits. Okay. So, currently, any employee gets holiday, sick, and vacation. Mm-hmm. So, if Luana's going to work 24 hours a week, but could be working 30, depending on, you know, what meetings and things. So, she's colored two-thirds to three-quarter time. She doesn't really want to lose all of her vacation, all of her sick time, mm-hmm. you know, because she is here, she could be here three-quarters of the time. And so a way to deal with it, I think Dale's got it, not, you know, we would just have an agreement that says as long as you're unemployed until either party wants to change it. It wouldn't be something we're going to guarantee, but right now we're fine with it. And
okay.
I think Adele's solution is good.
Not full-time benefits.
No, she would be proportional. I mean, we'll come up with something for her as a percentage because her hours can change, but it will be above half-time, mm-hmm. but under three-quarter. I mean, we'll come back with an agreement on that.
Yeah.
Do you guys all think that's mm-hmm. where you go?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're okay with part-time folks not getting the other benefits.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Temporary full-time, you know, that's the person that came in like a summer job. They're full-time, but they're only here for 3 months. And they're not eligible to receive the benefits. So, and then the temporary part-time, that's like someone that's only a few hours a day, and only for a few weeks or months. So that's getting pretty far down the food chain. They're obviously not going to get benefits. And then you get the temporary agency employee where you contract them out. And they actually work for the temp company. They're not an employee of the city, so you know, we don't get anything. Then employee classifications. This exempt employee, this was a broad one to me. Look where it says under B, it says exempt employee, and I put a big question mark in circle. It seems an exempt employee is an employee who holds a bona fide executive, administrative, professional, or other qualified position and is paid a salary at least equal to the minimum salary required under law. They don't receive overtime. My understanding is you've got to have some manage. You have to be able to hire, fire, or be some sort of a manager to be exempt. But this is just saying an employee who holds a bona fide executive administrative professional or other qualified position is paid a salary. In other words, Patty is a professional in the fact of how she does her job. But she has no one to hire, fire, or make decisions. How is she exempt from the wage and hour laws? That's when I put a question mark that I think I need to ask about. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that an exempt employee is one that can make an independent decision on policy.
We need a definition, and mm-hmm. I mean, basically, we want it to be if a person is by definition to be exempt, we want them exempt, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure it's that broad. But
usually, managers of departments, you know, an office manager is exempt because of what they do, but we don't have anybody in that capacity.
Okay, well, I'll check into that further when we send out our next draft. Hours, pay, overtime, that's all pretty much laws on all of that. How we pay on the 5th and the 20th and twice a month. And, they can have paycheck deductions, direct deposits. We don't do direct deposits now, but we want it in here if we ever set that up and if it's available. Your PTO policy is your time and a half. Recording of the time. Right now it's done on a time card. We do not have a time clock.
Can you set that up on the computers?
Where they put in their time?
Right. I worked for H&R Block and we came in and checked in on it.
Sure.
Actually, many businesses here in town do it.
Okay. I mean, it doesn't matter probably what kind. It doesn't define the time card, whether it's electronic or hand. Absentee tardiness, you need to, you know, obviously be on time. It talks about if you're, you haven't notified the city manager for 2 or more consecutive days, you voluntarily terminated your job. This is all kind of basic stuff. Appearance, I've had some people say that they want to make sure our staff looks different or whatever. But we felt, the staff and I felt, we looked at each other. And
without any sexual harassment.
Yes. We all did a 360. And, it's saying you need to be professional for what it is you're doing and the nature of the work that day. And since I've been here, I haven't really had any. No one's came in. Never mind. I won't say the things, examples we used. But, dress policies are they're important. I mean, they actually are important. You want people to look good and be professional. But Lapine is also a pretty blue-collar town.
We still don't want employees greeting people coming in here in shorts and a tank top. I mean,
I agree, and that would be not. And the city manager gets to kind of decide as to what's appropriate. So
that goes for you too.
Yes. I wear shorts and blue jeans 99% of the time until I came here. Employee personnel files, and I think this one just for us to go over because I think that's again been a little bit of an issue in the past, and and we spent some time in this policy. Everyone agreed to an employee may examine their timesheets or any other record relevant to proper computation of his or her pay. Obviously, they can do that. Employee may examine the records contained in a personnel file. The employee can ask to look at that anytime they want. Wages, hour, benefits, discipline, or other terms and conditions of employment. At any reasonable non-working time during business hours. What that says is they need to do it on the break, technically, or at lunch. How you examine them? for the protection of all and to maintain employee privacy, the employee may examine his or her records only in accordance with the following. Records may be examined only by the employee, the city manager, a member of the city council. So any one of you can ask to see the employee file. Or the city attorney. Records may be examined by appointment or prior arrangement with the city manager. They can only be examined in the presence of the city manager, and that's part of it, so people don't take something out of it. So you can come to City Hall, you can ask for the records, you can sit here and look at them.
It's confidential, isn't that correct?
Oh yeah.
If I come in and ask to see Luana's file, for instance, and I look at it in your presence, I can't go outside of here and start saying what's in it.
That's correct. If an employee disagrees with any information in the file, the city does not agree to remove or correct it, the employee can explain it. In other words, they can submit a letter. If they don't like something that you put in it, it doesn't say that I have to take it out. It doesn't say that we have to agree. It stays. The employee could write a 10-page document saying why they disagree, and it all becomes part of the file. And I think this is an important one to follow from the city county insurance, because these are the places you can get into legal trouble. Mm-hmm. Now, if we change something here, we need to have real good reasons. Furnish information to third parties. The city assumes no obligation to furnish information about any employee to any third party other than to verify their employment. An employee who desires the city to furnish information can't authorize us to do so. In other words, the employee wants us to share it. That's up to the employee. Is everyone okay with that section?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Personal conduct, this is kind of like, you know, you got to be good when you're off duty. We're not going to interfere, but, you know, you need to be, obviously, not do something that's adverse, affects the city's, you know, interests. Outside employment, you can have outside employment as long as it doesn't affect your work. And an example would be if someone, we meet on Wednesday nights, and you went and took a job that required you to work Wednesday night somewhere, and you're our minutes taker. Well, that doesn't work. If they want to take a job on Sunday, they can take one, as long as they're showing up for work. Meals and rest periods, 30 minutes, receive an unpaid, this is the normal law, 30 minutes of unpaid, talks about if you work X amount of hours when you do them, you get your 10-minute breaks. Expense reimbursement. They thought some of you, because of just comments you made in the past, you know, some of this may be of interest. You're reimbursed for your expenses if you're out doing something. Obviously, they pay you mileage for meetings, workshops, and other required travel. Prior authorization from the city manager required. The reimbursement has to be submitted within 30 days of the travel, and then they'll do it at the IRS rate. Travel, lodging, and other expenses. City understands that times employees have to go out and that we would handle the basically the out-of-pocket expenses and that's
you missed up there where it is required that you take your break.
Yep. Yeah, I just didn't read it all. But yeah, you have to take a break.
Yep. Some people don't realize that.
Yeah. Well, we do. They do. Not really. Actually, they both kind of go all the time, and then when there's a chance, they go out and smoke up the community.
I don't smoke.
Oh, no, you don't smoke. She gets on her cell phone. I know their habits. Expense reimbursement, try watching other senses. You know, that's, I mean, we don't do much travel. I mean, people really don't do a lot of travel, but really, I don't know how we'll wait. Because somebody said, well, someone doesn't like this. Well, if you make someone go to Eugene to a meeting and have to spend the night, you cannot make them spend their own money. So it's kind of like, if you send them, and again, the city manager has to approve it. So
I think what needs to be clarified in here, which is kind of, has been kind of confusing for any of us, because it's, has never been written, is what about the meals? How much of the meals are reimbursable? Or should they be, or?
On travel?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in the course of the if your duty is usually, you're compensated. So if you're on the road and it's dinner time, you're only on the road specifically because of your duty as a counselor or an employee, so you should be compensated. If you want to stop down the road for an ice cream, well, that's not compensated.
There should be a limit, though, too, on compensation.
Yeah. You have to eat anyway.
One thing about it does always say the city manager has to approve it, and you can put a lot of things. We can put limits, and then the limits have to be updated, and is it so much for breakfast, so much for lunch, so much a day, and then people make money on that when you start doing it, because they'll take a TV dinner and then charge you $20 for dinner. With two employees and with three or four more coming, and the city manager has to approve it, I think it's...
But is it, this is just for employees.
Well, this would be us. I mean, basically, this would be, even though you're... This is kind of how we'd all... I mean, I think if you're off with the city on business... And the argument is that someone may have eat leftovers tonight. I can eat that for a buck. If I'm in Eugene and I got to spend 10, should I have... You can argue both ways, because me, I turn in very few meals. Well, to the city here, I never have. But, I mean, I don't turn them in when I'm on state. I'm on the state Marine Board, travel at state expense. I don't turn in 10% of my meals because I'm busy and I'm eating, and I throw my beer on it at night, and I don't want to go through the hassle, so I just...
But, you know, it's a little bit different. We've got Adele and Barbara going to a conference, and I'll tell you, I don't think that we should... They volunteer their time here. I don't see why we should be very short with those people on this particular thing. I mean, if I'm going to Redmond for a meeting and I elect to stay up there and eat dinner, that's different.
Yes.
But if they're going there for a specific time period to benefit the city, we should compensate them for everything that they spend within reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't
really think you either one of them would be out of reason.
The word is within reason.
Right.
We send you, you have to eat. And we should pay you for it.
That's right.
You also shouldn't have steak and lobster.
Do anything like a daily meal
What Barb said is there are places that do that. They're usually probably more sophisticated than us. They have more going on. Like the state, you get per diem. Mm-hmm. You get so much a day. That's kind of a pain.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If someone turns in an expense account, you know what's valid and what's not. And then if you see something that's not right, you question.
And if you guys start simply, you see those bills, you'll start saying, now what's going on with this? But you said it very well with that. I mean, when the council, when you guys are off to a meeting somewhere and you donated your time and everything, I think it's fine. And we haven't had any issues with it. Okay.
There's another issue, too, about lodging.
Okay.
So... Do you think it would be reasonable to expectation that for each person to have their own room? Or because I think that, that there are some companies who have an expectation that you share.
I am not sharing.
No, I mean,
that takes care of that.
Yeah. You know what? It doesn't address that you have to. Yeah. So let's just assume you don't. And if you have two young guys at the sewer department that are going up to the sewer meeting, they can share a room. But us old timers who sleep 2 hours and get up, some sleep an hour and go smoke a cigarette. You know, we got all kinds of things we all do all night, you know. Some get up start, some of you start working on the internet, I don't know.
I'm sure Adele wouldn't appreciate having to share a room with me.
Thank you, Don.
That's a good point, though. I think we're okay.
Okay, now wait a minute. Are we being discriminatory, the old guy?
I
will
double check.
Smoking. He's just talked about the 10 feet away. Basically, they can smoke on their own. They can smoke in their own vehicles, just not in our vehicles or buildings.
Do you think the 10 feet's a little short? Because I was thinking of me. Two of me laying across the road, and it's just not that 2 feet that.
That is the wall.
Okay.
Well, and see, we're in the building, so I don't know. General telephone use. One of the things it says is people in the audience cannot use a BlackBerry during meetings.
Ooh, I'm reading your handbook here.
Oh, are you?
Yes, sir.
Did you know I was going to put that in because you've been playing with that so much?
Yeah, I've been reading it. It's great.
Oh, good, because we put it online.
Yes, you did. See?
Oh, okay. The telephone use, and we spent some time talking, because it gets into cell phones and things. The gist of all of this is that you can get a call. It's just natural. You could say you cannot get a call, and that's not going to happen, because you will. But it says all has to be within discretion, and keep it to a minimum, and so on. So it's a judgment call again, and if there's a problem, the city manager ultimately can chew you out for it, and eventually write you up and put a little note in your file that you're using the phone too much. But I think the key to it is you can get a call, and you will get a call. Keep it to a minimum, and use discretion.
Well, sometimes your place of work is the only place for the dental office to call and confirm your appointment for the next day. So, you know, there has to be allowance for that sort of thing.
Okay. And then there's no expectation of privacy. I think it's important, whether it's on a cell phone, I think it addresses on computers too. But, you know, you say something here and there was no, you know, anybody that's listening can hear it. And I think it gets into later on the computers. But if you type it and it comes in here, you have no expectation of privacy. So, if you want privacy, keep it on your own computers at home or telephones. City credit card use. Now, I scratched off on this. It gets down about the third line. Any purchases made using a credit card must be submitted using a purchase order request form. We don't have a purchase order request form. The credit card really should be rarely used, other than, like, say, go down and get gas, but we're not going to fill out a purchase request form. We just don't do POs. We haven't.
But we passed the audit. Audit
you don't
practices.
Have POs.
Okay.
There's no requirement.
Some places don't accept them.
Yeah, it's just kind of. I didn't want to put something in, and you know that you're going to have a hard time meeting. The credit card, bottom line is, should be rarely be used, and all we've used it for is to gas up the rig and a couple little things. Yep. Motel reservations, maybe for the league. Mm-hmm. And you keep it here, it's locked up, it doesn't go home with anybody.
So the language is still in here?
I crossed it off. We went through this when we did it. You know, this is still the draft. I didn't start making changes on it because we got all operated up the same one. But I crossed off the purchase order thing.
Well, they still have to submit the original receipt.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's your check. I mean, the city manager can look at that receipt and see if it's legitimate or not.
Yeah. Okay, nothing there. The staff agreed with this. You don't employ immediate family members, and it goes on to describe that. But basically, you know, if you're a bigger agency, you know, you've got 1,000 employees, you can have, you know, one's at the fire department, one's at the police department. But here, that's not possible. And so this was the wording that they had in there, but you can't have anyone being the boss over the top of, you know, someone's relative. And then it describes all those relatives, and it's pretty broad. Uncles, nieces, nephews, stepkids, grandkids. If there's an exception, the city manager, you know, there could be an exception, I guess, if it says it, that in writing, the manager could waive that.
How's that going to affect us if we absorb sewer and water?
Well, it won't, because
for a year.
The mother will not come with us. She's not on the council. She doesn't work here.
The board will dissolve.
The mother is a board member.
Yeah.
So she goes away.
There's only one.
Yes. And for a year, you know, there's another state law that says you're going to have to keep what you have. Now, that particular situation, the daughter, the one daughter is only part-time, and they told me that she actually has another job and is not going to be working there anymore. But for a year, that's a whole other discussion, but yes. And I don't think, it doesn't say. Take Barvan. Barvan ran for the council or got appointed, and her daughter was working for the city. Doesn't talk that a council person can't have a relative working for the city. Because anyone can run for office and get elected. This is employees, but good question. Ethics, the political activity, just because we're in a political season, it basically says while you're working, of course, Oregon law says you can't solicit money, influence, or otherwise promote or oppose any political committee or candidate while you're working. However, this prohibition does not restrict the right of a public employee to express personal political views. What that means is, at home, they could put up a lawn sign for someone, they could sign a petition for someone, they could donate to someone. They just can't do any of it here. Because some people have said, well, I can't do it even at home. But that's not a bad answer to give. Gives you cover. records retention, there's some laws that tells you about. The Attorney General actually has a whole thing on records retention and what is required to be retained. And so what it's telling you is you have to follow those rules. They're not going to spell them out in here. The next one, or if you move on down to the weather, we decided this was okay. What this is saying, so you get the snowstorm. I have an okay here, so we must have decided we thought it was fine. It says if you can't come in safely and you can't come in, don't come in, you need to notify the city manager. As the city manager's around, you know, you'd probably call the mayor. I mean, those are just things you would do. I don't know how you've kind of done it, but they acted like, to a degree, this is what would happen now, I suppose, if you can't get in because you got a foot of snow at your house or 2 feet. You know.
Good enough.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you get these suggestions over the radio where, you know, ODOT asks the radio to advise that people, you know, just don't go if you don't need to. That might be, you know, that's the kind of guideline that you could go by.
That's the highway, usually, though, or major roads. We don't have that.
Yeah. Well, we might have an employee who needs to drive on part of the highway or Burgess Road to get to.
And Burgess is extremely dangerous in the winter sometimes. It won't be anymore because of the school, though.
I know that there's been times that there's been so much snow that I couldn't get out of my driveway to get someplace at a certain time. I had to wait till I could get somebody to come in and plow 200 feet of driveway. So, I mean, that could happen very easily to one of our employees, too, if they had something like that. Yeah. And they should feel that they have the right to stay home until they can get out reasonably.
As a rule of thumb,
slap some snowshoes on.
As a rule of thumb, I think that if the school's designated as a snow day, that's usually a good indication to stay home.
There's only been a few times in the last 15 years where you haven't been able to go to work because of the snow.
Well, we don't want to use the school in Manners, because it seems like today they have a snow day when they smell snow.
The 4 years I've been working,
and
then I've only did it twice.
But since we have such a wonderful snowplow program here, you know, we should have a program.
And Don has his hilarious.
Our staff is dedicated. They're going to be here.
See, that's when I was living outside the city, too. So
you were
now that I'm inside. And don't solicit me for any campaign contributions.
Okay, I got this lady coming back here in the corner.
Number 10, I put question marks, and if you get down toward the bottom of A there, and Vicki will appreciate this because I did this for her, I questioned it. This is saying, if you restart the title, employees will provide and then they have confidential. For the purpose of this handbook, to get down to the term confidential means, without limitation, any and all documentation or information relating to or concerning the city's future plans, business affairs, employment, legal or litigation matters, and certain other proprietary information. Well, I realize that a legal matter could be confidential. Litigation would be confidential. But I'm having a hard time that says our future plans. We're sitting here talking to our planning director about where we're going. Business affairs in general, I don't know how they could be held confidential. What this is saying, they can't share them with anybody. So Vicki comes down and wants to know something. This is all kind of saying the employee can't share, can't tell her. And this seems way too broad for me. Do you agree?
Yeah. Well,
I don't quite understand it. And I went to anyone yet on these because I wanted to get to you guys.
Well, we sit here and discuss our future plans in open session, as we should. And it may need to be a little more defined, like future.
I'm going to call the insurance folks, the people who put this together, and ask them, what do they mean? Because they know. Like you say, we've only had one half-hour executive session in the 2 months I've been here. Everything else is public information.
Yeah.
So that definition...
That didn't make a lot of sense.
So I don't understand. In the next paragraph is kind of about the same types of things about making copies and so on and so forth.
Employment, legal, and or litigation matters, that should stay in, don't you think?
Well, yeah.
No reason to stay.
You're right. Those things can stay. There's a whole bunch of this paragraph has got, I think, a problem from our Oregon open meetings laws.
Yes.
We'll call this the Vicki Amendment.
She would never ask for anything.
Of course not.
There we go.
Okay, B, the same question, basically, gets into the competence. And then it talks about returning confidential information, you know. So I want to go over this whole confidentiality thing here. Internet, kind of same thing here. And you go down to E, it's a discussion of, yes, you can have an email. You need to keep it to a minimal. You need to use care and judgment when you do it. If you get too far, the city manager is going to tell you. You have no right to privacy of that email. If you send an email from here or receive an email from here, we could all know what it is. So, incidental use of emails is not in and of itself a reason to basically terminate an employee. And I think that's pretty standard, Dale, would you say? You know, employees are going to use email. It's become part of our life. And now, you hope they're not sending out 100 of them in a day. That's not reasonable. We can also track internet usage under privacy. If we wanted to put a tracker on, if we thought someone was surfing, Victoria's Secret all day, you know, we could do that.
That goes for you too. Nothing can be deleted anyway. So.
Yeah. Is everything in this section basically you think okay? It's kind of the boilerplate from them. Okay, performance evaluations, compensation, number 11. I got a question mark here, so I got to go through and say why. I know one of them. Compensation packages are confidential between the employee and the city. Anybody can call here and find out what your benefits and wages are. It's a public record.
Yeah.
How can that be confidential? No one likes it always, but to be out in the middle if you're making big money, but that, I just don't, again, it kind of goes back to the other part we were talking about. I don't know how that's confidential.
I've always heard it is because if employees come here and one of them is making more, even though they're the same.
I've heard, and then private industry especially, but the fact is, the bulletin will put the top 10, the school superintendent makes 120 and his assistant makes 115. It's a public record. So I don't know how you can say that it isn't.
It might be company policy in places.
Private companies, yes. You're right. Then it says, they can only tell their immediate family members, their tax consultant, and their accountant what they make. So, and you can get disciplinary action up to and including termination if you break it.
That's all changed after Bell, California.
Yeah.
That's all changed
There's another city that's come up.
Maywood.
Okay, performance evaluations. This is, you know, when we do our, the city manager will select a time. It could be annually. They're saying we need to do it annually. Could be more often if there's an issue. Two-way communication. It goes through and tells you, you know, what we do. All those kinds of things. We didn't have any issues with that. You know, another thing that will happen just in general is, you know, this will ebb and flow. We'll kind of find things. We say, you know what, let's change. It's our first time we'll have a policy. And I think that, you know, in a couple months we say, let's go change that sentence. Because this doesn't require a big public hearing or something. This is going to ebb and flow. You kind of got to have a base to start from, and then we'll tweak. Employee benefits, this we talked about, we want to change it. Well, no, we're going to keep it the same, but we're going to do something for a little on it. specifically, because I had written down here I wanted to make it 20 hours so that you could get the proportional holidays and so on. This is a little different, but the employees like this. They get 7 defined holidays, and you'll notice there's a list. Memorial Day, Independence Day, Thanksgiving, Day after Thanksgiving, Christmas Day. Then they get 3 selectable holidays, and that kind of throws in this new generation of holidays, Martin Luther King, presidents, veterans, and a floating winter day. They may want to work on MLK, they may want to work on presidents, and they can pick the other 3. But they got those 4 days, or one's floating and the other 3. They can decide if they want to come in on one of those days.
Pretty generous, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, because they're knocking out MLK Day and President's Day a lot of places.
I don't know, you know, that much about that. Maybe.
Yeah. What's the justification of day after Thanksgiving?
Well, that's probably already in your policy. That's pretty common. Nobody hiring. Almost all government closes on that day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's
right. Day after, huh?
Yes. The only one that opens is retail.
Yeah. There's really nobody out. It's an easy way for government to get rid of the holiday when they're really not affecting the consumer.
You're supposed right. to shop.
Yes.
I mean, I think that under the selectable ones, I mean, we have 10 holidays in our policy now.
Those are federal holidays, yeah.
Yeah. So this is just kind of saying if someone, you know, President's Day, Martin Luther King in particular, a lot of times, some places open, some don't. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's kind of like the employees get to pick how they want to do that.
What about, I don't know, the, so then a part-time person would get paid
half
for
pay.
Florida?
Well, they get whatever release.
Well, no, Adele, we're only doing it for her. Remember, part-time employees aren't going to get any holidays. We're just going to do one for her. So.
No. Well, they can't come in on Labor Day or something.
No.
They won't come in, but they won't be paid.
They won't be paid either.
Oh, okay.
No, part-time employees, we've decided, don't
right.
get any holidays.
Oh, good. Okay.
Except we're going to do something for Adele.
Luana. Go ahead and do something for me. I will welcome it.
I just have, when it goes to determining salaries, one of the things that really irritates me about public employees, and please don't take this, but it seems like they all want to compare themselves and what they're getting to the largest city in the state, and they should get the same.
Yes.
And I think that's not the way to set salaries. Now, how are we going to do it?
Well, I don't know how what I'm going to do as for our next budget. One of the things we'll do is kind of look at what comparable, but you can see I did it with the charter. I'm going to pick cities in our region above us and below us, and you pick a couple others out there and make it kind of proportionate. I'm not going to go pick a Bend. You see, that makes no difference. And then you kind of get a feel for it. I think, secondly, once we have sewer and water, probably one of the things we'd want to do, because we're going to have to redo our whole benefit package, and I think that we might have someone. You can hire somebody that can go do kind of a whole analysis of, because what should a sewer worker 1 make, a sewer worker 2 make, a water worker 1, and so on. And the sewer waters may have some templates on that too that they've got. But I think that when we switch from 2 employees to 5 or 6, we're going to have more of a step scale. I mean, this is going to, that's one of the things going to change. We're going to have a, you know, a 5-year step increase in his certification levels, but we have 1 year after we assume them, but we don't assume them for 10 months. So we have a year plus 10 months, which I think is 22 months. 24, something like that. We've got some time, and I, of course, won't be here for any of it. But, So I think that with our 2 employees, we've kind of winged it like we have. But I'd say in the next year or two, that will need to change as part of our whole benefits, pay, sophistication level. Because what may have to change a little sooner is you want to replace me, you know, I'm kind of to a degree under a contract. No benefits, no nothing. But see, that isn't going to work for your full-time city manager. Mm-hmm. And they're going to, A, you won't get a city manager without retirement. You cannot get a retirement to 1 employee and not the others. So we'll be dealing with retirement in the next few months.
Yeah, I can understand that, and I have no objection to that. My objection is that sometimes, and you read it in papers all the time, that public employees especially say, well, now, over here they're getting this, and we're only getting this, and they're doing half the work. And that's not fair to me.
Right.
That doesn't, should be brought up now, I don't think. But that's
the next page, the top two sentences, will be especially the second one.
The first one, even.
I know the second one.
Are you knocking those out, I hope?
These were in here. Even the staff on the second one, you're getting wedding anniversary off. And so we decided, what if you have a significant other? Do you get it? Or what happens if you get divorced? Do you have to keep married? So,
the birthday is out also, right?
That's up to you guys.
I've never heard of
to get it.
25 years, I have never known anybody who got a birthday off.
Same here.
I get a birthday and holiday.
Well, you're special, but
Ben.
Fine example of a municipal employee. Put you down. But I mean,
sure.
What do you guys want on that question of the birthday? Should employees have a birthday off paid?
No. Well, no, because they get the following winter. I get amazing. I think they should come to work on their birthday and bring the birthday cake. That's the way they do it in Germany.
Do they get their wedding anniversary off?
No.
Okay.
All right. Well, you do have the PTO days.
Right.
And
Now, under paid time off, we have the PTO. You had 120 hours from 0 to 5 years. What you're saying is that's 3 weeks. Normally you would think you get 10 days of vacation and 10 days of sick, so that's 4 weeks. As we were talking today, they kind of felt that could be, another 4 weeks, because they feel a little bit like they used to get 2 weeks vacation and 2 weeks sick leave, which is 4 total weeks. Now you get 3 weeks. However, I explained to them, you also do get the flexibility. You don't have to worry about if you're sick or not. And that's kind of the theory, is I get more flexibility, so that's a trade-off. But this is the numbers that came in, but we didn't have nobody was having heart. It was just a discussion we had. What do you ladies want to weigh in on that?
So is this the schedule that we currently have now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But see, this becomes a new policy. So everything else has been adopted will go away in our ordinance, or a resolution we pass it. It's going to, circumvent everything else, because you've got to clean everything up to get rid of the old stuff. So just be looking at this. And
if we can get along without an employee for 4 weeks, we can get along without them for 52.
Okay.
Do you mean now?
I'm serious.
10 hours off a month?
Yeah, it's 110 times 12, that's 120, that's how you do it.
That's unbelievable.
Yes.
Well,
that's sick leave, and that's 3 weeks a year is what it comes out to. Don't worry so much about monthly, that's just how you accrue it. It's 3 weeks a year.
Sick leave.
That's sick and vacation.
Combined.
Yes. Right. So if you figure you take 2 weeks vacation, you actually don't get five of sick leave. It depends on if you want to be sick or go on vacation.
That's an awful lot.
They can do both.
Well, it appears a lot, because remember the discussion that we had when we in compensation of, we were not going to offer any retirement, and so we were going to give them the option of combining the vacation time and the sick leave time to get a bigger bank. Remember? And then there was a lot of discussion, we went back and forth. And there was something saying, does sick time accrue, and then it doesn't accrue, and then
that's
we decided that.
On the accruing side, but
okay. But yeah, we spent a lot of time on this.
And just so you know, I lost 123 hours of sick pay when we went through this policy. I lost
because you had accrued it, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, we did have a lot of discussion, and I don't think you were on the council, Jens. So you didn't.
I was before me.
Yeah, you didn't hear any of it. So the things that you're expressing are very similar to the kinds of things that I expressed back then. People should be darn glad to have a job. And, you know, there's time off here, time off there, and it's paid and everything. You can get carried away with that.
Well, I'm not against employees having time off.
No, I wasn't saying that at all.
There's reasons that people should have time off, and in fact, I just went through, while I was working, a death, a close family member of death. I mean, if I was working, it would have made me very happy to get a day or two off to go to Eugene to go to the funeral.
Right.
Oh, that's kind of...
I don't have any problem with that. It's when you get way carried away with it, you know, and next thing you know, they're working more than they're away on paid time off more than they're at work.
This is the numbers you have now, the 120, this little graph down there.
But you got to remember that figure of in lieu of retirement contributions.
Well, except you're going to probably end up with some retirement down the road, and this probably is
down
a
the road, yeah.
I'm pretty sure we will when we absorb water and sewer, yeah. Because they have it already.
Right.
Higher than PERS, incidentally.
Mm-hmm. On PERS?
Pardon?
They're on PERS?
They got 9%. I think you got 6 on PERS, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I guess those numbers are okay. I mean, I can't. If you drop that by 40 down to 80, that would be pretty. That would hurt your recruitment.
Those are
fair
numbers.
And we definitely have to remember to relook at it when we do the retirement.
Yes. Now, this next paragraph here is, I put the question mark, and this gets into a little bit as the chirping back here that I was getting, which was very good advice. Because I was multi-listening back here. you only get to build up 60 hours, and that's only basically a week and a half. So what it says is, you know, if someone's going to have, I mean, it's not uncommon. I think most people are used to when you got 10 days a year, if you went 3 or 4 years, you could build up 30 days or something. So if you happen to go have a cancer surgery or something, or if you break a hip and you're going to be gone for 4 to 6 weeks and you haven't been sick for 10 years, you've got something built up.
Yeah.
This is saying the most you can build up is 6 weeks. Excuse me. A week and a half.
And so
if I don't, and that's the only thing, is a person, a week and a half isn't a long, as you get older, is not a long recovery in an operation at all. And so it's just something to think about.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not reasonable for major surgery. I mean,
and that's just when you build up.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't use it from the year before, it's not giving it to you. It's just saying, if I only take 100 hours last year, can I carry 24? The next year, maybe I, you know, it just allows you to carry it forward. 60 is not a big carryover.
Provided we don't have to buy it out at the end.
We're not jumping ahead.
Well, that's just what I was going to say, so I'm glad you said it.
Yeah. I mean, it's something to think about. It could be a bigger number. I doubt I'd be able to at least get a couple, 3 weeks, I think, if they build it up. Remember, you're not giving them. They just simply have built it.
You know, somebody that goes to work for you in their 20s and they work for 15 years and they never get sick during that time, you could have built up a year or 6 months.
Most places have some sort of limit. There's so many days. But a week and a half is...
No, but if you think about it, though, see, that's why the policy that we had created for this, putting all of this together, that's why it's so weird, because it's accumulated so fast, and there's no, you can't distinguish between sick time and vacation time. So that's why we're in the pickle, because there is no distinction, you can't distinguish that.
Well, like he says, we're going to have to change things when we absorb water and sewer.
Yeah. You could keep it like this for now and just realize we're going to change it.
But they've got it.
I think so. Okay. Just to keep it the way it is.
Sick leave and vacation time separated. Yeah.
Well, scheduling PTO tells you, you know, how you have to, you know, how you do it and when you're going to take it off, and it works pretty good right now. That goes down. You're no payment of PTO when you leave. They don't, if they terminate voluntary or involuntary, they're not paid off for their PTO. So, and that's what it says. They're not, and that sounds like that's what you want to keep. So.
Yeah.
It's totally contrary to any other company, yes, public or private.
Normally, you would, sometimes they'll put a cap, they'll put, vacation is normally paid, I think it's vacation's paid off, and sometimes sick leave is not.
Can I give you my experience? The city I work for, all employees, when they first started, got 8 hours a month sick leave. That accumulated, there was no top on it. You can accumulate as much as you wanted. Vacation time for the first 10 years was 10 hours a month. And accumulate up to 3 years. After that, use it or lose it. Because we had people that would not take vacation time.
Right.
They would not. They just want to keep working. So they were forced to take it or they would lose it. So, and that's what you want. You want people to take their vacation time. So you only limited, you only up to that amount in 3 years. At the end of your cities, you know, I retired after 20 years. Some of that, I didn't have that much on the books because I had gotten sick a few times and I had, my sick leave was down to like 100 hours. You know, and I got paid for that. Part of my vacation time that accumulated, I can have that go towards PERS.
Right.
You know, towards my retirement. Mm-hmm. Or I can take it in cash, up to a certain amount.
That's right.
You know, there were, we had guys there that had 1,500 hours of vacation time. And the city said, no more of this. No more of this. You get one hand run a check, but it's really hard on the city.
Yeah, and that was the thing we talked about, the use it or lose it. And, you know, you can cap those things.
Yes.
It's, and I think we did.
But it's an earned thing that the employee had earned.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the scale for vacation time was that from 10 to 15 years was 12 and a half a month. From 15 to 20 was 15 hours a month.
Yeah.
But you can tweak that every which way you want.
The state will no longer put sick leave into PERS, though.
They won't?
No. When I retired, they would do it, but they'd stop that.
Yeah, that's what they did with me. I put
it in
my
PERS.
Right.
Well, the California PERS is a little bit different than
Orange
PERS.
Okay, so what?
You sound like you're going to leave
what
on.
What are we doing?
But it's not, you just leave it
just
for
leave
now.
Just leave it for now.
But yeah, again, we're going to have to readjust.
Yeah.
We're
going
to have to merge. Okay, leave of absences, you know, 13 says that you could ask if after a year you could leave, ask for a leave of absence. It can be given or not given. That's unpaid, you know, some kind of a sabbatical, I guess. It doesn't require us to give it. They have to do it in writing and da-da-da-da. Bereavement leave. For purpose of this policy, and there's a listing of the relatives, and they don't get down to aunts and uncles and things. Up to 3 days of paid leave to full-time employees. And that doesn't count against their vacation time is the way I would read that. So if their kid dies or their dad or mom dies, they get 3 days paid. And it's a very tight list. Like I say, it's not aunts and uncles and cousins and next-door neighbors. So what do you guys think on that?
That's reasonable,
yes.
I think.
Okay.
Yes.
Three days is standard all over.
Okay.
Something like that.
Consists on it. Jury duty. Now, here, in here, it says they will pay you for jury duty up to 10 days. You don't want an O.J. trial, or as Patty said, not in the Michael Jackson trial. Any of those guys, you know, you'd be in trouble. But your average trial is a couple, 3 days. But 10 days of pay if you are a full-time employee if you go to jury duty. I do not know what places normally do on that.
What about
some do, some don't.
On the one, my experience. On jury duty, the city paid my salary. But what I got from the jury went to the city.
Right.
Yeah.
Except for mileage. The employee kept the mileage. But whatever the court paid went to the city. Mm-hmm. So it kind of offset a little bit of it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's reasonable.
Mm-hmm. So can we add that in there?
Does it say that in there? So you want them to have, they can have, do you, first of all, are you okay with 10 days pay for Drew?
No.
Okay.
You should take the 10, I don't think, there shouldn't be a time limit on it. If someone gets called to jury duty, yes, they have no control over whether they're going to be there 2 weeks or a year. And it would not be fair to, just because they were called to jury duty, it would not be fair to financially destroy them with their job.
That's right.
I agree.
If you're called to jury duty and you've got to go for 3 weeks, your employer, us, should pay your wages for those 3 weeks, and the money that you get from the jury duty should be deducted from your paycheck.
I think they should study.
Well, they turn over the check, I think.
However, they usually just deduct it, right, when, you know, when that happens.
I mean, let's face
it. What do you call for here in Oregon? You're called for 21 days or something, and you have to call on the phone every day to tell you to come in? Well, you can very well run over 10
days. Well, I'm assuming this is 10 days, a jury up to date. This is like if you went for a 2 week trial.
Yeah.
This wouldn't be that you can. You're calling in, like, it would be if you had a 3 month trial, you're going to pay for
that. Yeah, no, we should. I would think you'd take the time limit out. If you get called to jury duty, that's your responsibility as a citizen.
Well, you're getting awful soft.
I'm kind of fair. That's, you know.
Yeah,
that's, I've been on jury duty before, and I had no choice. I got called in a murder trial. My employer had to pay me for 2 months. But that's only fair.
Okay, so you want to have that limited jury duty time?
I would say so.
I think the city should step up to do that. I mean, it's called duty for a reason, and it shouldn't have to make you.
Yeah, I don't want the employees running down to sign up.
Notification. I think they should select all the jury duty people from the Senior Citizen Center. That's
they can only call you once every couple of years.
You guys got nothing to do down here.
Okay, so
military leave is no issues there particularly. It's, again, you're going to get into FMLA, it gets into a little bit of, you know, basically if you're a reservist, you don't get paid while you're gone, but you got to, you know, give them their job back when they come back and da-da-da-da.
That's fair.
Then we get to the Family Medical Leave Act, and then what did we do with that? Did they do that as a supplemental? Ladies?
Did anyone else?
Well, I guess we don't have it.
The policy is currently being drafted by city attorney.
I will include it in our draft. It is right from the FMLA.
Can we take a break? And then go. We can make copies? And
well, I can give it if you want. You can go copy it. I just stubbed it in mind because we're going to have to change paragraphs around a little. For the FMLA piece. Here. Come here.
I'll go. That's no problem.
So you can just have it. But that talks about, you know, and this is according to Jeremy, that one you can't do much with. It says you get 12 weeks off if you're having a kid. You know, you don't get paid for it. 12 weeks. You don't get paid.
No.
You can use up your sick leave. If the dad wants to go take care of the kid, you know, you all heard the horror stories on it. But it's grandma gets sick.
That's a federal law.
It's a federal law.
Mess with that at all.
And all government entities have to abide by it.
Yeah.
So that'll get paid. So that means we go to page 24, equipment use and care. Says you got to take care of tools if you use them. Obviously, that's pretty self-explanatory. This is talks about termination. Nothing can be contrary to your at-will employee. Again, it says that you can be terminated for any reason. You have to return the city property when you leave. Post-employment, we'll have to have a form down under C that
Yeah, equipment use. I'd like to make it a point there. We have a Jeep out here, and they said that hadn't been serviced too regularly up in Sisters, and I think that if we're going to want that to last for a while, we need to make certain that somebody sees that it's serviced regularly.
Okay. That's good. Yeah.
Did he write down the mileage and check it?
However he wants to do it.
Yeah.
However you want to do it.
So far, we've got 20 miles on it. It'll be a while. And then that's a good point. We'll take care of it. Post-employment inquiries, you know, that's kind of where they have to go to the city managers. Back to this thing where you kind of just tell stuff that they've worked for us and not much else unless the employee wants it done. And then exit interview. It does call for an exit interview. And then there's Exhibit A, is that the employee would sign this, that they have read it and understand it, and then that becomes part of the personnel file. and then we'll get the complaint form. So what I will do is take the changes, things that we've talked about, ask some of the questions. We'll get the FMLA integrated in and try to get this back out, you know, next week, late, you know, the end of next week. I was hoping to approve it the first part of September, but if we need to wait till October, we can, because we're going to do a separate agreement with Luana, so we could wait. You know, it may take us another couple meetings. No one needs to sweat it. We'll do it as we, you know, it needs to be done right.
Thank you. And I'm not getting soft to you.
Hey, thank you.
You did a great job on this.
Thank you for taking this extra time on this, because it's important and we needed to.
What about tomorrow? What happens tomorrow?
The cell phone is sitting on top of the cabinet, and it just sits there.
Rick, what about tomorrow's meeting?
We have a 2-year contract. I don't know. Yes, we have a 2-year contract on that cell phone. Don't look at me. I never knew.
It was like that when I got here.
It's a contract. I can't break it.
You actually can.
Are you going to mention tomorrow night's meeting?
Yeah, well, I'm just putting this back.
Oh, okay.
Up in LA stuff. But she brought up cell phones, so I was just trying to listen to both.
Maybe we could give it to Vicki to use, since he calls you all the time.
Yeah.
You want me to try to terminate it for you without the fee?
We could have Luana, why don't you call and check on the cell phone if you want to break it, what would it cost me, and so on and so forth.
It's through the government. It's a government contract thing, so it's a little different.
But maybe that's a government contract. They might let you. Why don't we check into it? Because I don't use it.
City manager report.
Nick, was he here?
Or was that your city manager report?
I mean, something else may come up as we go, but that's basically. I mean, I could talk about a lot of things, but we don't need to.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. You did get the report. We need to know on meeting with Sewer and Water. You've got that email today, isn't it? So they want to have a meeting with us. You know, they want to have it at 10 in the morning, and so I think we should probably do that for them. That does cause a little bit of a problem for some of us. But, and we need to have it here, obviously.
When's that?
Well, we need to pick. They want it in September. I mean, they didn't say when. And so I was thinking if on September's dates here, they like Tuesdays, that's kind of their day. They meet on the 21st, they want it before there, so I was thinking the 7th was right after Labor Day, maybe the 14th.
Those are Don's bad days.
Okay.
For me, before the 13th and after the 21st. That 10 days on out of town.
So we're looking at the 7th?
It doesn't have to be a Tuesday. I mean, it could be a Wednesday.
Yeah.
We already meet on the 8th, we're here, so you could have it. We have that morning. No. You guys tell me.
That's not a good fit for me.
What day?
That's the day after Labor Day. I didn't know if people were gone or people are taking their first graders to school the first day and the kids crying.
How's Thursday the 9th?
The 9th? Okay.
Thursday the 9th?
After our meeting?
Did they say in that email? Because I forwarded you their email, I think. Uh-huh. Did it say they had the 11th, they couldn't do it? I don't know.
I can't remember what.
The 8th don't work for us, or 9, 10, or 9, 21.
So if 9 doesn't work.
No,
Thursday could work.
The 10th and the 21st.
So you want to make it 10 o'clock on the 9th?
Okay.
10 o'clock on the 9th? We'll send that to them and see if that's okay. Write that down, Luana.
Okay.
Email that to me. So
we can't do an evening so that Adele can attend.
Oh, Adele will be here.
Yeah.
I know that.
She works and I work, so once in a while these things come up and we just have to try to
get it in. That's a pretty important.
Well, she gets
the 9th.
The 9th. It hurts her because she has to take personal time off.
What is it? 10 o'clock on the 9th.
I miss a job. I have my money's over in my pocket.
But you have your cell phone with you.
I can't do business in a meeting with my...
So, don't plan on imagining
not a meeting.
It would probably be a couple, you know, plan on a couple hours. I'm sure we'd be done by noon, and you know.
Be down by noon.
we'll, well, we can move, I mean, but, you know, that, we'll see where that goes. The article in the bulletin today on that, you saw, was actually a pretty good article. I sent it to those who didn't get it, and actually it, I got, two or three calls based on that. It were positive in a sense. The USDA, who I've been attempting to meet with for about a month, and that hasn't worked out, they read it from their offices. And so they are now, we have a meeting next week. So, and they admitted to me that the story stimulated that. We got the request today to meet with Sewer and Water. That came this morning after the story in the paper. So I think that, you know, definitely people are watching it. And then I had another call. So we'll do that. You saw I sent out snowplow. Him and I talked about it a little bit tonight, but we sent out requests for snowplow contracts, and we kept them in the two divisions like we had before. I went out and rode around, met with both contractors, as I said in the email, and we had a good discussion. They showed me things, told me things that work and don't work. And so we'll get requests back. Bye, Vicki.
Bye.
We'll get requests back on end of September and go with that. What him and I were talking about tonight, the next one I'm going to try to get out in the next week or so, when I come back next week, will be the maintenance on the Cagle subdivision. And we're going to try to do one for the fall, one for the spring, do it together with one bid. We'll get a better price. And then we give them a couple months to perform it, and then they can pick when they do it based on rain, because it adds about 30% more when they have to haul water. They have to use water. And if they see a rainstorm coming and they can go do some roads, it'll save us money. What happened last year, and no fault to anyone, you were in a hurry, you gave them 5 days to do it in June. Well, there's probably no rain, and they can't plan for it when they bid it. So this way they can say, I figure in 2 months we'll have rain a few times. And that, it should help us a little. But anyway, we'll send that out to the group and get some prices back. And so I'd like to do it for a year, two contracts, so that we don't have to come back. And another thing about having someone know that they're doing it twice, they can give us a cheaper price. They also learn the little idiosyncrasies out there, like pipes that stick up. You know, I had the one gentleman say, you know, right over here you'll notice a blue thing in the road. And I look, and sure enough, right under the gravel is a blue water thingy. And he says, you clip that with your plow, or you clip it with something. And so, you know, by having the same people, I also learned that we do need to go in the Cagle area at some point and trim those trees back, because in the Forest Service, guys from Bend had said they'd help us with it. So that is something you guys talked about a year ago, but then the guy wouldn't respond to the lawn, and then finally he called me after I sent him an email. I really wasn't sure what the issue was. Yeah. And now I do. That the trees are growing in, and so your right-of-way is being taken. And that affects your snow plowing. And the other thing is, well, the longer the right-of-way comes out, the more it becomes part of their landscaping and part of their decorations, because first the tree comes out, then the little welcome rock wall that you round comes out, then the little figure that you put in front of that comes out, and what you end up with is everyone's got 10 or 15 feet of public right-of-way. And then when you come to put it back where it goes,
big trouble.
People are upset. So, something that probably next spring, it would be interesting to start working on cutting that back. It's not a priority, obviously, right today when we have the other things.
We need to keep in mind that we have to have this snowplow thing done, bid it out, ready to go by the 1st of October. We waited way, way too long last year, and we were lucky we didn't have any major snowstorms before we had it put together. We need to have it done by the end of September, because you've seen it. You've seen snow on the 1st of October. And we can't be, like last year, we can't be standing around with no contracts and having too few snow on the ground.
I'll have them for your October meeting to come in. And then we took off some streets and added some streets, the senior center and so on, added them and took off some dead-end streets that had nowhere to go. No point in plowing it. So, that's enough.
Can I throw something in?
Yes.
Terminex called. They're through bugging us for the season. They've used up all the money, and it has frozen, so it's pretty much done. They did thank us for the opportunity and hopes to do it for us next year, and they'll send us a quote when the time comes. But they also wanted to let you know that they did run through the Roslyn campground a couple of times as a public service down here.
Oh.
Did a little bit extra.
Oh, how nice. You know.
So,
nice.
Anyway.
There weren't any mosquitoes during the thunderstorm at the community picnic.
Yeah, I wondered how that went.
Oh, it went wonderfully. We were all soaked.
Okay, anything else, Laura? Then we had, there's the meeting tomorrow night. Can anyone go to that?
I'm going.
I'm going.
Oh, good. I have a wedding reception that I'll be at, so.
Are you going to go, Dale?
Goody, goody, goody.
Are you going to ride together?
No.
Got it covered.
You can. We're going. We have other things to do in Bend, so we're going to drive up to Bend early.
Okay.
CAG is going to carpool up there.
Excellent.
Or is it caravan?
So what we should be prepared to do is just to reiterate that we're in support.
You need to support the tax amendment and the partition. And it's got to be, because that is what you're dealing with tomorrow night.
Yeah, okay.
And you actually can do it almost in a sentence. You're not there to talk about the smokestacks and things. And and they'll keep you on track on that.
Which of us can do it? You could
just like sign up and let you all go up and or maybe they sometimes they put two or three chairs at once up there. If there's you could all three of you at a time go up and just say, but like I say, just try to stay away from those are not issues before them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Can we, as a result of this meeting, I think we were all on board with this, right? Can any one counselor with consensus tonight, or all counselors, as the conversation comes up, say yes, that the full council is in support of this?
You could have that person say, and they could point out and say, and Barbara Hedges is here, Don Greiner is here in the audience.
And then the planning commission, too.
So maybe someone would have a list of names so you don't get that goofed up when you get up there.
Okay.
Of whoever's there that's kind of officially between in our system here. That would be fine. Yeah. Then you don't have to have it.
Yeah,
I have a question.
One second. I'm okay if anyone wants to say, and the mayor agrees.
Oh, I'm in agreement with it, yes. You know, we're all in agreement with it.
Okay.
I'm in agreement, but I do have a question, and I really don't want to ask you a comment. Since we are approving this, I mean, if it doesn't go through, you know, this falls through and this company falls through, is that a carte blanche for any company that comes in? I mean, are we saying, this company has been really good. Sylvan wasn't as good.
No, they weren't.
You know? So if another company comes in, is it all there for them and they don't have to have any of this stuff? You know, they don't have to do any presentations?
Well, the text amendment will be
if it doesn't go through, that's...
If it goes through, the company falls out, and then 6 months from now, another company comes out. Well, everything's already laid out for them. They don't have to.
No, conditional use. You'll always have to go through conditional use.
And that's
what's going to trigger.
But it has to be a matter of law. It's just, it can't be, we don't want you here.
Right.
Right. Because we have that text amendment in place. If it falls within the criteria, if it's utility and all that, we have to have a valid reason, not because we don't like you.
But the reality is a little bit is if it requires a 150-foot smokestack and that causes the community to come unglued, when companies are looking for towns to go to, they'll obviously decide, because they don't want to spend the money and time. They're not going to spend a year going through a land use process in a town that just turned one down.
Okay.
See, so that's the reality.
Yeah.
If La Pine, you know, it doesn't surprise me that this is now coming out. Maybe people just always, we all talk to ourselves. We're all guilty of that. You know, we do talk to ourselves and we think everyone's on board or everyone's against something, everyone's for something. You find that that's not necessarily true. The other thing is, two people with today's electronic society can act like a group.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's people who don't like, as these guys said, they don't like burning wood products.
Right.
And it's a statewide deal. That guy had the same flyer that he just stuck it up in Rainier, Oregon. It could be in Nevada.
Yeah.
It just changes the location.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I just, you know, my own understanding of it, I just wanted to know how that, you know.
Maybe Lapine doesn't want a biomass plant.
Yeah. They're awfully slow and sane, so.
Right. Well, it's typical for Lapine that people don't express their opinions till the last day. It's always been that way.
Well, there have been some letters that have gone to the planning or to the
But this process has been going on for almost 2 years.
Yeah, that's true.
And now we're just in the last month now we're getting all this opposition.
And most of the people didn't go to the presentations.
That's right.
I'm finding it's still rumor.
What I've heard when I talk to people is that most people actually think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Whether they live way far out or in the city limits, it's the ones who live right there, a small handful of them that don't. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I'm very impressed with this company and the way they handle things. And you know, they seem to be very concerned about fitting in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of company I want here. But
well, my main concern, and I've said it before, is that the things that we've asked them to do with traffic, with jobs, with improvements to the community, with participation, that we have to make sure they follow through.
Right, yeah. Right, right.
6 months from now, they can't say, well, we changed our minds, we're going to run all the trucks down 97.
Right.
We can't let them do that.
No.
They made a commitment, we got to hold them to it. Legally, how we do it, I really don't know, but there has to be some way, somewhere.
Get it in writing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you have any further public comment?
I'll be there tomorrow night.
Audrey, anything you want to say?
See, we ran everyone else off.
We did.
No, Lorraine and Ted will be there tomorrow night, too.
Okay. All right. Well, if everyone's in agreement, I am ready to adjourn this meeting. Anything else, Rick? Nope. 9:05. Meeting is adjourned.
Sorry about a 3-hour meeting, but we took a while to buy over.